Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I don't see any other hands. Should be good. I'll just check in, Pam. Do you have anything else since you were the one who was responsible? Did you have anything you wanted to get in before we wrap up?
No, but I got the same impression. I think that the evidence speaks for itself that we're not comfortable talking about it. So, no, I didn't have anything else to add.
Right on.
Yes, we are not. That is the truth. We are still a conversation that is still hard for us to break. That's why I say you can't. I told the young lady that you can't expect stuff to happen overnight.
And, you know, one thing, too, we are permanently stamped. I think a lot of black women, I'll just be for myself, a lot of, you know, just knowing that other people know that you've had sex with a white male, that is a thing that can totally trash your reputation. We're very much aware that our sexuality is a direct statement to a lot of people about everything that we are. You know, whereas, you know, men can do what they do and it does not necessarily follow them. But black women can be immediately trashed and discarded because of our sexual history. And I think that's a practical side of not talking about it. Not necessarily a correct side, but a very practical side.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's just something that, but you know, but the book has been written, so it's not much more. I did the painstaking stuff, you know. The book has been written. At least we can read. And like I said, we got to heal ourselves also, too. So the book is written for healing purposes also. Okay. So we do need to heal it. We need to be honest with ourselves because we can't keep it inside. So we need to be able to identify. We will be able to identify, should I say, with one of the females in the book. One of our stories that we read is gonna strike up because we have to get this stuff out of our brain because we're holding it and we're not supposed to hold it. Yeah. We have to clear it. Clear our minds, okay? So there's no excuse. We do need to clear our minds of it. We can't hold it.
I agree. I think your book is very healing, and I would just like to say that no one should use this information as a weapon because we are all victims of white supremacy, and we all have our moments where we were victimized and we didn't do anything about it. We didn't know what to do about it. So none of us should throw stones at each other about anything that has to do with us being victimized by white supremacy or white people. We have to have empathy for victims, not one-upmanship. That's the only thing I would like to add.
Right. Yeah.
Context of White Supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018, so I have been told. This is our sixth study session on Pamela Evans Harris. Her second publication, Black Love, is a revolutionary act. Very irregular to have the book club on a Wednesday. We normally do this on Fridays. We have done this on Fridays for 6+ years. The irregularity is because yoga teacher training a gang. I've been talking about doing prenatal yoga teacher training. Incidentally, all of my yoga started with the flood. The last program that we had before the interim when the flood happened was about the trauma that Black pregnant mothers face with racism during pregnancy. Maternal mortality rates, we've been talking about that quite a few times. It's been reported in the news. I'm beginning prenatal yoga teacher training tomorrow, just putting that in greater context, but beginning prenatal yoga teacher training on Thursday, and it is rigorous. It's an 85-hour certification program. It lasts, it's like 40 hours a week for 3 weeks. You do 4 days where it's basically all day from 10 in the morning until very late in the evening, late enough that it will heavily disrupt the broadcasting schedule for the next 3 weeks. I did not know it was that long, but I feel like it's a sacrifice worth making in the long run because I think I will be able to do extraordinary counter-racist work, helping pregnant Black mothers in particular deal with the stress of racism. So that is why the book club is today. We are not shirking our duties to Pamela Evans Harris and our counter-racist grind. So we're just kind of reconfiguring the broadcast over the next 3 weeks until we get back to our regular schedule. With that, the audio segment that you heard at the beginning, that was not Pam's a visit from Pam to the program. That was actually Renethia Tate's first visit on the program to discuss her book, Pieces of a Puzzle. Pam was a huge fan of that book. She quoted Miss Tate regularly. You'll hear her being quoted today. And Pam worked tirelessly to get contact information from Miss Tate so that we could have her on the program. I mean, for years, because Miss Tate, she didn't have a big website at the time and all of that. So, I mean, Pam really did a lot of just digging and going through websites and searching and writing and searching and searching and looking, and got her contact information so that we could have Miss Tate on the program, who was just a guest with us at the beginning of this very summer to discuss the royal tragedy, big wedding that happened over in the UK, interracial tragedy. But again, that was all because of Pam's work and just how much she appreciated what Miss Tate had to say. Miss Tate, the first time she was on the program was back at the end of 2012, and who was one of the very first people to call in with a question? Pam the Great. We will hear more from what Pam had to say when she called in on that program later in this broadcast. For now, we will get started. This is Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. Pam the Great, Context of White Supremacy, audio segment number one.
Shiftless or Shortchanged, a Short History Lesson. After slavery, Jim Crow laws were created in the South to prevent Blacks from achieving educational and economic equality with whites. Many Blacks immigrated north, hoping for a better life, only to discover they face rampant discrimination in employment and housing. Unable to find work that paid a living wage, some Black families were forced to seek government assistance to survive. As more Blacks became dependent on welfare, the rules changed, forcing the Black man to leave the home if his family received benefits. Many Black men were faced with two gut-wrenching choices. One, stay with their family and let their children go hungry, or two, leave so their children would have adequate food and shelter. There is a third and more humane and moral option. Give the Black man the same opportunity to earn a living wage that would allow them to support their families. Historically, Black males were barred from most high-paying occupations even when they had the educational requirements. Prior to the 1970s, the American Medical Association barred Black physicians from membership, professional support, and advancement. Many U.S. school districts excluded Black professionals and teachers from working as public high school teachers until the 1950s. If a black man found a job, it seldom paid a living wage and usually involved menial labor with no opportunity for advancement or higher pay, regardless of his education and experience. In many instances, the black male was either unable to secure adequate employment or settled for being financially exploited by racist bosses and co-workers. The black male was stripped of the one thing every man needs to feel like a real man, the ability to adequately provide for and protect his women and children as the head of his household. 2010 and black men still not working. It is more difficult for a black man with no criminal record to get a job than a white man with a criminal record. Being black in America today is basically the equivalent to having a felony conviction. CNN, 2008. Wage inequality and employment discrimination still persist to this day. Black men earn 78 cents for every dollar white men earn, even when education is comparable. College-educated black males fared no better and are twice as likely to be unemployed as the similarly educated whites. Affirmative action equals a lose-lose for black males. While affirmative action opened a few doors for a limited number of black males, it created a wall of white resentment. If black males strive for higher education and take a coveted university seat, some whites cry reverse discrimination. Once they graduate from college and land a good-paying job, they're accused of using affirmative action to cheat whites. Behind closed doors, their hard-earned credentials are routinely dismissed as dumbed-down affirmative action degrees. When it comes to corporate downsizing, black males are usually the first to get a pink slip. If black males attempt to join the skilled construction trades, they're confronted by abrupt rule changes and impossible hurdles. If they attempt to join the police or fire department, they're accused of practicing reverse racism. If they don't pursue higher education, a trade, a profession, or find adequate employment that pays a living wage, they're labeled as shiftless parasites who feed off the labor of hard-working white taxpayers. Clearly, it's a case of damned if black males do anything and damned if they don't do any damn thing at all. The hardest-hit group of workers, African-American men, were hit hardest again. Their unemployment rate is 17.3%, up from 16.7%, nearly double the 8.9% unemployment rate for white men. Women of both races fare better, 7.1% unemployment for whites and 13.2% unemployment for African Americans. Source, The St. Louis American, September 3, 2010. A recent study in New York found one out of four black males between the ages of 16 and 24 has a job, which is the equivalent of a 75% unemployment rate. About 35 years ago, I applied for a job at this Wall Street firm. I had a college degree and graduated in the top 10% of my class. I was 23 years old and naive as hell about the ways of the white world. They tested me and set me up for an interview. The white man who gave me the first interview told me I had scored higher than anyone he ever tested. He acted like he was impressed and set me up for a second interview. While I was waiting, I was scoping out the place, thinking, I got this job. I was asking the receptionist, a young white female about my age, about the company. As soon as the second white man saw that young white female smiling at me, I knew I wasn't getting that job. We went through the charade, but instead of asking me about my qualifications, he talked about sports. I never heard from that company again. My biggest regret is that they got away with it. I should have sued, even if I didn't win. Harry S., 60, retired government employee. Reason number 5, to demoralize the black male. The demoralized, white-identified, self-hating black male. Some black males have become so demoralized and fearful that they deliberately seek out the safety of white friendships, relationships, and environments, hoping to escape the fate of other, less fortunate black males. They may desperately mimic the attitudes, tastes, and lifestyles of the whites they wish to emulate, and may go as far as to avoid other blacks completely except for family, for fear of being too black by association. Some males will degrade other blacks around whites to separate themselves from the despised black masses and their own despised black selves. At a highly publicized 2006 Cape Cod murder trial of a black male accused of the rape and murder of a white female, the sole black juror told a white female juror that all of his brother's wives were white, that he always had been around white people, and that he did not like blacks because look at what they are capable of. How fearful black males submit to white supremacy. Number one, excessive grinning, smiling, joking, playing, clowning, acting a fool, and adopting a foolish or clown-like persona in the presence of whites, hoping to be safe from attack by whites who see the strong-minded, self-respecting, black-identified black man as a threat. Number two, adopting effeminate, feminine behaviors, personalities, language, walk, and wearing female clothing and makeup, being docile and non-assertive with whites, shunning facial hair, wearing dangling earrings like a female, and excessive jewelry like a vain, effeminate peacock. Number three, rejecting black females romantically and dating white females or non-blacks exclusively. I have neutralized myself by choice and have no interest whatsoever in black unity, in creating more black babies that look like me, or in challenging the system of white supremacy, black inferiority. The best evidence is the non-black female I am with. Number four, negatively stereotyping other blacks to impress, appease, or reassure whites. How can I be a threat to white supremacy? I'm black and even I don't like blacks or myself. Please exclude me even while you're mistreating other black people. Number five, raping, robbing, and murdering other black people is the most profound act of submission to white supremacy that a black person can commit. It is an expression of extreme self-hatred and an unconscious desire to return to slavery and the modern-day plantation, the prison industrial complex, PIC. Is there a mass media conspiracy to homosexualize black men? Many of us who are alarmed over this growing sexual confusion are mostly reacting to what is being done to our sons. And because of this, we are unable to effectively arrest the European psychosexual assault on them. We do not see ourselves as powerful enough to stop others from turning our sons into their daughters. In the Western cultural context, men fear men, not women, and European men fear African men for many good reasons. Mwalimu K. Bomani Baruti, African scholar and co-founder of Okoben Institute. Reason number six, to destroy black male heterosexuality and black genetic power by effeminizing black males. Promoting more contempt for black females guarantees an increase in homosexual black males. The racist mainstream media almost always portrays the black female as untrustworthy, unstable, undesirable, and naturally antagonistic towards black males, in sharp contrast to the white female, who is almost always cast as a loving friend or soulmate of the black male and a more nurturing mother figure for the black male child than the monster or missing in action black mother. If the black male has been programmed from a young age to despise the black female, he will not be able to love her, respect her, or desire her romantically, and will be prone to abuse and abandon her, turn to another race of females, or to another male. How can a man have a loving, respectful, and sexual satisfying relationship with someone he has been taught to despise? And if the black male believes he came from the most despised female in America, his black mother, how will he ever love and respect himself? This may also explain the reason the mass media entertainment industry promotes and rewards black male entertainers who demean black females for profit and take their blood money to enrich white and non-black females. Is there a link between the degradation of black females in the media and an increase in homosexuality and suicide among young black males over the last 15 years? We believe there is. Black men in dresses, comedy, or conquest. Flip Wilson as Geraldine, the original cross-dressing female. Jamie Foxx as Wanda on In Living Color. Damon Wayans and David Alan Greer as homosexuals on In Living Color. Tyler Perry, Madea Movies, Tracy Morgan, Howard Rollins, deceased, appeared in a dress on a talk show, Chris Tucker, Will Smith, Eddie Murphy as Rasputa, Kenan Thomas as Virginica, Martin Lawrence as Shanae, Big Mama's House 1 and 2, Arsenio Hall in Coming to America, RuPaul's reality show, A Famous Black Male Drag Queen, Wayans Brothers in White Chicks, Wesley Snipes in Tu Fong Fu with Love, Little Richard, who explained his girlish persona was designed to keep whites from assaulting him whenever he performed in the South. Why does white Hollywood love black males who wear dresses? It's a question comedian Dave Chappelle pondered when he appeared on The Oprah Show in February 2006, shortly after he turned down a $50 million Comedy Central deal and an offer to wear a dress in a film with black actor Martin Lawrence. I'm a conspiracy theorist to a degree. I connect dots that maybe shouldn't be connected. Certain dots, like when I see they put every black man in the movies in a dress at some point in their career. Why all these brothers got to wear a dress? This happened to me. I'm doing a movie with Martin. The movie's going good, so I walk into the trailer, and I'm like, man, this must be the wrong trailer, because there's a dress in here. The writer comes in, and like, Dave, listen, we got this hilarious scene where Martin sneaks out of jail, so he disguises you as a prostitute, and you put this dress on. Nah, I'm not doing that. I don't feel comfortable with that. As of this writing, Chappelle hasn't appeared on film or TV since 2006. Is this his punishment for not allowing himself to be feminized and for not selling himself and his soul for $50 million? White men vs. black men in dresses. Some blacks dismiss this predominantly black male occupation as harmless entertainment. But if it is so harmless, why are black males the main ones doing it? A handful of white actors have ventured into the sacred territory of panty girdles and high heels, but have always played a man who only puts on a dress to accomplish his goal, then takes it off before the end of the movie. The authors weren't able to find even one white actor who built an entire movie career dressing up as an ignorant, obese white female. In fact, it is rare to see an obese white female in a Hollywood film, despite the significant number of real-life obese white females in America. For example, in the movie Mrs. Doubtfire, Robin Williams puts on a dress to accomplish the manly goal of spending time with his children. The movie character Mrs. Doubtfire was a very likable, well-mannered, and admirable character, unlike the females portrayed by most black actors. When the dress no longer served Mrs. Doubtfire's purpose, Robin Williams took the dress off and reclaimed his manhood and fatherhood. The fourth difference is the lack of balance for black actors, who generally fall into one of five categories. 1. A crooked or straight cop. 2. A criminal. 3. A clown. 4. A drag queen, female. Or 5, a human sacrifice who risks his life to save a white female child, or white civilization. Black males in drag throw black females under the bus. Black men in drag usually promote the most unappealing and cruelest stereotypes of black females. It is easy to dismiss the degrading images of black females as the business of show business, but every black male needs to realize that whenever black males throw black females under the bus, they are going along for the ride. Why white males in drag never stereotype white women. All the black millionaires and billionaires combined would not have the money or the juice power to persuade white males to produce, promote, or perform in a movie that degraded white women for being white. Not because the white male loves and respects the white female. It is due to his understanding that the white female is the truest reflection of the kind of man he is, which is why the white male puts the white female on a pedestal and rewards the black male for doing the exact opposite to the black female. The lower the black female goes, the lower the black male falls, which is reflected in the condition of black males collectively, while the rest of the non-black people on the planet wonder, what nature of men enjoys and profits from degrading their own mothers, sisters, and daughters? Why does white Hollywood love black males who degrade other blacks? Comedian Dave Chappelle, during a 2006 appearance on The Oprah Winfrey Show, explained his reasons for turning down the $50 million Comedy Central deal. He recalled a particular sketch where a white crew member laughed and was struck by the thought that this white person was laughing at him, not with him. He confessed that some of his sketches made him feel socially irresponsible, making him question the kind of messages his comedy was sending to the millions of viewers who tuned in each week. Later, on Inside the Actor's Studio, he admitted walking away because the show's spirit was changing. "I would go to work on the show and felt awkward every day. That's not the way it was. I felt like some kind of prostitute or something. If I feel so bad, why keep on showing up to this place? I'm going to Africa. The hardest thing to do is to be true to yourself, especially when everybody is watching." Chappelle appeared to be the exception to the majority rule of black male actor-comedians who profit from perpetuating the same negative stereotypes that demonize their own mothers, sisters, and daughters. Punishing black males who refuse to embrace homosexuality. "Well, you know I hate gay people, so I let it be known. I don't like gay people, and I don't like to be around gay people. I am homophobic. I don't like it." Tim Hardaway, black former NBA player, was permanently banished from All-Star Weekend and stripped of all product endorsements, 2007. "No, I did not call TRA faggot. It never happened." Black actor Isaiah Washington from the hit TV show Grey's Anatomy after he allegedly called white castmate T.R. Knight a faggot on the set of the TV show. Under the relentless pressure of negative publicity, Washington formally apologized in the Golden Globes press room. "I apologize to T.R., my colleagues, the fans of the show, and especially the lesbian and gay community for using a word that is unacceptable in any context or circumstance." January 2007. A few months later, Washington was fired. What are the long-term ramifications for black boys who learn it is more profitable and safer to be a feminine black male than a strong, masculine black man? Is it a fear of black males or a white obsession with the black penis? The black male and his legendary penis have been the long object of envy, fascination, lust, and hatred, beginning with slavery. Ironically, while white males mercilessly raped black male and female slaves for over 400 years, the black male was somehow transformed into a savage black rapist. This myth of the black rapist and his huge black penis is so powerful within the white collective mentality that just the mere thought of a black male raping or having sex with a white female has provoked white males into murderous rages throughout history. A key scene in D.W. Griffith's 1915 film, Birth of a Nation, depicted a psychotic black male rapist assaulting a white female. This scene so inflamed white audiences that race riots broke out in Boston, Chicago, Denver, and in other major cities. The 1933 film, King Kong, where a gigantic black gorilla nigger male abducts a blonde white female, Faye Ray, was symbolic as the monster black male lusting after the white female. The fascination with and degradation of black male genitalia has made a fortune for the porn industry by producing videos showing dark-skinned black male performers with large penises ravishing petite white and Asian females. Sexual voyeurism or hidden homosexuality. There are numerous private clubs in the U.S. where white males pay black males mandingos to have sex with, rape, and ravish their white wives. Some black males have reported being approached by white strangers who offer money in exchange for having sex with their white wives. "I like seeing Amber, my wife, get off. It excites the hell out of me. It's better if they're black. All Amber wants is sex. Black guys get that. And I know that Amber would never date a black man." Jeff, a 40-year-old white male and a member of a private sex club where dates are arranged at the homes of white couples between black males and married white females. Source, Meet the Mandingos. Our translation, "I like seeing Amber get off, but I'm really not interested in my wife. All my focus is on that black male and imagining it is me who is having sex with a black man. This is the only way I can satisfy my secret homosexual desire to experience and possess a big black penis." The authors could not find a single sex club where black males paid white males to have sex with their black wives. The widespread fear and fascination with black male sexuality is evident in the black male stereotypes in TV and films. The Cowardly Black Male, popular in early films, symbolic castration. The Superhero Black Male, the virile, masculine, sexually dominant male. The Dangerous, Violent, Animalistic, Rapist of White Female Black Male, a.k.a. King Kong, who must be destroyed. The Sexless, Neutered Black Male, Friend or Rescuer, symbolic castration. The Black Male in Dresses, High Heels, and Earrings, symbolic castration. The Foolish, Ignorant Black Male Buffoon, self-castration. The obsession with black male sexuality, genitalia, is most evident among law enforcement. 1992, Stacy Coon, white male, the Los Angeles police sergeant acquitted in the Rodney King beating, gave his description in his unpublished memoirs of how Mr. King acted when Officer Melanie Singer, a white female of California Highway Patrol, approached King with a gun. He grabbed his butt with both hands and began to shake and gyrate his fanny in a sexually suggestive fashion. As King sexually gyrated, a mixture of fear and offense overcame Melanie. The fear was of a Mandingo sexual encounter. In a Los Angeles Times interview, Coon defended his memoirs by saying he was trying to recreate the antebellum image of a large black man and a defenseless white woman. In society, Coon said, there's this sexual prowess of blacks on the old plantation of the South and intercourse between blacks and whites on the plantation. That's where the fear comes in, because he's black. Coon dismisses the mass rape of African women by white males by describing it as intercourse to project the white male's history of rape onto black males by pretending lying that black males have a history of raping defenseless white females. As was true then, and is still true today, at least according to FBI statistics, most white female rape victims were raped by white males. Even in police custody, black male genitalia are not safe. White cops are scared of black men. The bigger or darker the man, the more frightened the white cop. I can't shake that. It's a belief I will take to the grave. Norm Stamper, white former chief of police of Seattle, Washington. 1977, documented torture methods used against black males during interrogations in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania police headquarters included twisting or kicking testicles and stabbing one suspect in the groin with a sword-like instrument. 1972 to 1991, Chicago Police Commander John G. Berg and Chicago detectives torture over 200 black men to coerce confessions. Some documented torture methods, applying a cattle prod to nipples, genitals, and rectal interiors. 1997, Abner Louima, a Haitian immigrant, was sodomized with a broomstick handle inside a New York 70th Precinct police station by two white police officers. While Officer Schwartz, white male, held him down, Officer Vlope shoved a wooden stick into his rectum, sodomized him. 2007, Caprez Kofi, an unarmed black male sodomized by white police officers with a screwdriver in an alley after being pulled over by Chicago police officers. Doctors reported tears to Kofi's rectum and a screwdriver was found in the police car's glove compartment with fecal matter on it. 1993, seven African immigrant van drivers accused a white male Queens, New York police officer of raping and sodomizing them in separate incidents. The district attorney Richard A. Brown dismissed the charges. 1993. Are these depraved sexual assaults by white males a desperate attempt to turn the black male into a non-threatening female? Fear of black males or a fear of forbidden desires? 2007, Florida Representative Bob Allen, a white male Republican, was arrested for soliciting sex from an undercover black male cop. The reason he gave to the police? He was afraid of becoming another crime statistic. This was a pretty stocky black guy, and there were a lot of other black guys around in the park, and you know. It is illogical to believe Rep. Allen was so afraid of becoming another crime statistic that he volunteered to perform oral sex on a black male undercover officer in the men's room at a public park. Perhaps this fear has less to do with being a victim of crime and more to do with the secret sociopathic and homosexual obsession with the black male's penis and his genetic dominance. Is the homosexual longing for black males so powerful and so unacceptable that it leads to unprovoked violence against black males and black male genitalia? Fear of black males or fear of a strong black man planet? The strong, heterosexual, self-respecting, black-loving, black-identified black male refuses to hide behind the false facade of femininity, bisexuality, or homosexuality to appease those who are threatened by strong black masculinity because his women and children need him. The strong, heterosexual, self-respecting, black-loving, black-identified black man has no desire to breed himself out of existence by fathering children who do not look like him or his ancestors, because this destroys his powerfully melanated African genetics. The strong, heterosexual, self-respecting, black-loving, black-identified black man does not define himself by a white supremacist, materialistic, non-spiritual definition of what a man should be. He refuses to degrade black people for profit. He refuses to be used against his own people for personal gain because at the end of the day, he knows the collective condition of his black community, his black women, and black children depends on what he does and who he is. The strong, heterosexual, self-respecting, black-loving, black-identified black man is white supremacy's biggest fear because he is a weapon of mass injustice destruction. On the day the black man makes the fateful decision to die on his feet fighting for justice, then live on his knees as a slave, is the day the world will rejoice because the sleeping giant, the black man, the first man God made, will reclaim his rightful throne. Chapter 35, Tales of the Backside, Flipping the Hollywood Script. Disclaimer, the following is entertainment satire and a work of fiction. All names, characters, places, and incidents are the product of the author's imagination and used fictitiously. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, business establishments, events, or locales is entirely coincidental. Scene. Rufus Smurf, the black superstar, singer, entertainer, actor, walked into the oak-paneled boardroom where studio execs were waiting to hear his latest brainstorm. How about this? Rufus said, wide-eyed with excitement, a sequel to Big Whale of a Black Mama, called Big Whale of a White Mama. The icy silence that followed made big balls of sweat pop out of Rufus's brown forehead. Don't you get it? Rufus continued hastily. Instead of a fat, nasty, ignorant black mama, she'd be a big, fat, nasty, ignorant white mama. Mr. Smurf, the silver-haired chairman of the board, fixed his steely blue gaze on the quivering black man standing before him. Yessa? Do you want to work in this town again? Oh, yessa. Rufus's lips stretched as wide as the white tooth grin on the black statue of Rastus that the chairman kept on his desk. He felt like kicking his own black butt. He should have known better than to mess with white women when he got one of his brainstorms. He'd better stick with the nigger females from now on. Then stick to the program, the chairman ordered, sliding a fat white envelope across the desk, and do the job you were hired to do. Show enough, boss. Rufus glanced inside the envelope stuffed with large denomination bills. Just a little bonus for your great big well of a black mama, the chairman said, and we're submitting your name to the Academy for your portrayal of nig black women. Yippee! Rufus flashed a big white grin as he jumped up and clicked his heels in the air to punctuate his glee. The white men in the room chuckled and shook their heads. One murmured low to another, "Niggers sure can jump." "Can I go now, boss?" Rufus giggled, pretending not to hear. "What's your hurry, boy?" the chairman asked sternly. Rufus cocked his head to one side and hunched his shoulders like a puppy caught peeing on the new rug. "Got a court date with my new baby's mama," he said, feigning embarrassment, but secretly proud that these white men knew he was a baby-making stud. "You color boys sure love the poo-tang." "Yes'm, we sure do." The chairman waved an imperial hand. "Go ahead, don't spend all that cheddar on too much black booty, boy." "I won't, nuss'm," Rufus said as he backed out of the room. After the door closed, the chairman's cold smile evaporated. He reached under the table and opened a cardboard box filled with white robes and pointy white hoods. time to get rid of these damn things once and for all, he said. The blacks are doing all our dirty work for us. The nerve of that nigger, thinking we'd demean our white race with a movie like that? The red-headed VP of programming finally spoke. My grandfather, bless his dear departed soul, used to talk fondly about the good old days, the chairman said, with a nostalgic smile. He loved those old minstrel shows with darkies singing, dancing, and making fools of themselves. What good old days? The red-headed man sneered. What's changed? His question was met with derisive laughter from the men in the room. Blacks are animals. They respect nothing, not even their own women, mothers, churches, or themselves, said a blond man, shaking his head in disgust. Of course, they're animals. That's their nature. Personally, I thank God every day for making niggers. The chairman patted the backs of the men as they filed out the door. That great big whale of a black mama just paid for my new 80-foot yacht. The end. Why White Hollywood Loves Black Men in Dresses. To defeat my enemy, I must destroy his manhood. I will turn the black male into my conquered male-female, she-male, and pay him millions of dollars to wear a dress, two earrings, stockings, and high heels in front of the TV and movie camera. I will make this conquered black male, she-male, the role model for millions of black men and boys all over the world, so the entire world could see that no matter how rich or famous or talented or successful the black man becomes, he is still a white man's bitch. Recipe number 12, Interracial Relationships. Tales from the White Relationship Battlefield. Have you seen what single women have to pick from as partners? I am tired of dating losers and unemployed little whiny mama's boys. Jenny, Jacksonville, Florida. A lot of women avoid marriage because they have to take care of the children and the housework, working 9 to 5, and wait hand and foot on a husband. Why should they do it? It's a life sentence. I'm on my 23rd year. Susan, San Antonio, Texas. Why get married, get loaded down with debt, bratty, ungrateful kids, and a wife who nags, complains every day? Stay single. You keep control of your time, money, sex, without worrying that one day some judge is going to take everything you earn away from you. Lloyd, Westbury, New York. Women have to figure out they don't need a man to have a successful, happy, peaceful life. Life lasts too long to put up with an annoying man or woman, for that matter. Jan, Corvallis, Oregon. Video responses from white viewers on a TV poll on being single versus being married. From CNN specials, sensationalized relationship books, degrading movies, and internet articles, black authors seeking fame and fortune at any cost, blacks are bombarded with a barrage of negative and false information about black-on-black love. On the heels of all this bad news comes the media-manufactured cure, interracial relationships. What the mass media does not explain is how whites with a 50% divorce rate can be the cure for what ails the romantically frustrated black male and female. Americans, regardless of ethnicity, class, income, are plagued by divorce, broken homes, missing and murdered spouses, domestic abuse, emotionally traumatized children, incest, cheating spouses, closet homosexuality, and babies born outside of a two-parent committed marriage. Married with children, white senators and governors are stepping down in disgrace after their homosexual affairs are publicly exposed. More than half of white American women and men are single or divorced, and the men most likely to seek a mail-order bride from China or Russia are white males. The explosion of dating ads, websites, and professional matchmaking services aimed at the romantically frustrated single white population reveals the cleverly disguised truth, revealed from the poll on the previous page. Blacks aren't the only ones having relationship problems. In spite of this truth, black-on-black love is relentlessly demonized by the mainstream media, while interracial white-black relationships are promoted as the superior alternative for blacks. Some blacks see the blatant promotion of interracial dating for blacks as a sign of racial progress, but the message interracial is better is never aimed at the white population, nor are whites encouraged to uplift blacks as a superior alternative to whites. contrary to popular belief, especially among the black collective, the least common interracial marriage in America is between blacks and whites. The majority of the tiny minority, less than 9% of whites who marry non-whites, marry Asians and Hispanics. Despite these facts, white-black interracial dating has caused more bitterness between black males and black females than any other relationship issue, including adultery, divorce, child support, and domestic violence, which leads to a critical and self-respecting question. Why are black males and black females fighting so bitterly over the tiny number of whites who are interested in dating us? Note: the following white female supremacist excerpts were taken from an article supposedly written by a white female white supremacist. The authors could not verify the identity or existence of this particular white female, but found the excerpts useful in exposing the mindset and motivations of the racist white female who has sexual intercourse with black males. White supremacy must embrace interracial sex. The fatal flaw of past white supremacy was segregation and apartheid. By outlawing and preventing interracial sex, it has led to more pure blacks being bred. Sex is the second most powerful tool after political social repression of non-whites. Britain, France, Spain, and Portugal conquered non-white colonies first with deception, second with military force, and finally through interracial sex. White female supremacists, Der Kosmonaut, 1972. What is the real agenda behind the interracial con game? The top 10 interracial myths should provide some answers and some long overdue food for thought. The con: debunking the top 10 interracial relationship myths. Note: for the purposes of this chapter, interracial refers to the most divisive interracial combination in Black America: blacks and whites. Myth number one: black male, black female relationships are more dysfunctional than white male, white female relationships. Comparing black relationships to white relationships in a white supremacy society, as if all things were equal, is as logical as comparing black poverty to white poverty, black schools to white schools, or apples to elephants. Fact: the black family and the black male and female relationship was systematically destroyed over 500 years of institutionalized slavery, racism, and racist media stereotypes. The white family was not. Fact: black couples have the same pressures white couples have, in addition to the social, psychological, and economic pressures of being black in a racist society. Whites are not penalized for being white. They are rewarded at the expense of non-whites. Fact: blacks are continually bombarded with propaganda about the superior benefits of interracial relationships. Whites are not. Fact: black males and females are pitted against each other by the white supremacy system via the economic, educational, social, political, legal, and law enforcement systems that penalize all non-whites. White males and females are not. Fact: after African traditions were destroyed during slavery, the only relationship role model for former slaves was the white male, white female relationship. What truth does the above reveal about the quality of white male, white female relationships? Some people say they date people from another race because they don't see color, and that's the way it is for me. I also think it's refreshing for a white woman to be with a black man. That adds something to the relationship. There's more openness, more of a feeling that you don't have to conform to everything society tells you. If I were white, I thought I could be a little happier. I wanted to be white because I was black, and black was never the right color. Dennis Rodman, former NBA ball player. Myth number two: love is colorblind. Unless the individual is legally blind, it is impossible not to see the skin color of another individual. It is common for blacks and whites who date interracially to deliberately shun the romantic partner of their own ethnic group. Yet, most will passionately insist they did not choose to fall in love because love is colorblind, even if they are not. Just because a relationship was not planned does not mean our choice of a partner was an accident. Most people would not accidentally fall in love with a 400-pound blind paraplegic, even if that person had all the other qualities they were looking for. But certainly, a black person who chooses one white lover after another is not colorblind, but is color obsessed, acting out a skin color fetish where white skin represents something superior that black skin, including theirs, does not. Some blacks date and marry whites exclusively, even when they secretly or openly dislike whites in general. The same is true of whites who date or marry blacks exclusively, even when they secretly or openly dislike blacks in general. It is just as common for whites who date and marry blacks to have few or no black friends and to avoid socializing with blacks of the same sex for fear their black partner will come to his or her senses and go back to black, or even the white person deep down knows they belong. Most interracial couples are so uncomfortable talking honestly about racism or facing the racial hang-ups that brought them together in the first place that just initiating a discussion about racism, white supremacy is enough to send them scurrying deep into denial or out of the room altogether. They prefer to ignore the 800-pound gorilla, white supremacy, even when it is standing with one huge foot on their and our collective necks. If an interracial couple cannot deal honestly with their own racial issues, they will simply spread their sick confusion to their non-white children and any black person within their area of psychological contamination. In fact, the need to pretend to be colorblind is actually an admission of color obsession and a big red flag that the white person making that false claim is probably practicing racism. The black person who claims to be colorblind, even while they are being victimized because of their skin color, clearly illustrates his or her white-identified, confused mindset. Otherwise, why deny the ability to see color unless color has some negative associations or provokes feelings of guilt or shame? It is possible but unlikely for whites and blacks to be attracted to each other where skin color fetishes, racial and sexual stereotypes, and self-hatred issues played no major role in their initial attraction, but eventually that interracial couple will have to face the harsh realities that are impossible to ignore in a white supremacy society. Color always matters. A Bratter and King study in 2008 found white-white and black-black marriages have the same divorce rates. Black husband, white wife marriages were twice as likely to divorce as white-white couples, and white husband, black wife couples were 44% less likely to divorce than white-white couples. Myth number 3, interracial couples are more committed than white or black couples because they have to be. It is difficult to prove the commitment argument when the divorce rate for interracial marriages is higher than same ethnic group marriages. According to the Bratter and King study found on the previous page, the marriages most likely to end in divorce were black husband, white wife marriages. Assuming this study is correct, here are some possible but unscientific reasons. Many black male, white female couples marry at younger ages based on societal and sexual stereotypes like the black male sexual prowess, swagger, or the perceived social status of white females. It is common for young, immature interracial couples to rebel, get revenge against society customs, white society, or white parents. Black parents are seldom the targets. However, once reality intrudes in the fantasies that brought them together, these marriages often collapse. Lower-income black males are usually limited to marrying lower-income white females, since the majority of middle- and upper-class white females prefer white males. These interracial marriages have the added strain of financial difficulties and pressures from family and society in general. The highly protected status of the white male in a white supremacy society makes him less likely to be penalized for his romantic choices. Black females who marry white males tend to be educated with equal or greater status, education, and income. These couples also tend to wait longer to get married, giving them greater financial stability and life experience. White males are more particular about the quality and compatibility of the black females they marry. She must be white identified. The black female must bring more to the table since her blackness is not seen as an asset, unlike the black male who is usually less concerned about the quality of white female he marries because her whiteness is automatically seen as an asset, and she often only needs to bring her whiteness to the marital table. Since all females and non-white males have been programmed to submit to white male domination, it may be easier for the black female to submit to her white husband than a powerless black one. It does not matter if the black wife has a dominant personality, she is still submissive to white supremacy. Unless the black male is already white identified, submissive to white supremacy, he may eventually resent and rebel against his more powerful and privileged white female partner, who expects him to submit to her white reality and value system. It does not matter if that black male abuses that white female. At all times and in all places, she is the most powerful person, and at any given time, she can pull the plug on him and their relationship. If the white female's main reason for marrying a black male is rebellion, curiosity, sex, money, or to enrich her genetics by having more melanated children, producing color, she is more likely to divorce the black male after her mission has been accomplished or the thrill has worn off. Now here we come to the importance of biracial children for the white supremacy project. First, lighter babies are produced. The children of black males and white females will be educated to hate blacks. They will be raised in all-white settings. The children will date and sex whites. Finally, these children will marry and have children with whites. Their offspring will turn white. It is possible for black males to have sex with white females and have no impact on the white population. When the children of interracial unions are raised by whites, the numbers will be regained. The end result is the white population increases, the black population decreases. From the black male perspective, interracial sex is a form of racial suicide. White female supremacists, Der Kosmonaut, 1972. Myth number 4. More interracial sex and breeding, the browning of America, will eventually end racism. This belief is anti-historical wishful thinking and ignores the 400-year legacy of American slavery and the realities of the global white supremacy system. One only has to look at Brazil and other Latin American countries with a large population of non-whites who have a white parent in WWP to see the white minority still rules the black and NWWP majority who are stuck at the economic and educational bottom. In South Africa, there were and still are separations between the ruling white class and the oppressed black class and the coloreds, NWWP, who get a few more crumbs than blacks. Even in America, a small white minority controls the white and non-white majority. In the UK, United Kingdom, interracial marriages has created a lot of confused black people who think they are white until some white person calls them a nigger, and then they are shocked. Michael, 37, healthcare worker, UK. It is the quality, not the quantity, of numbers that counts the most. If the majority of the non-white population are deliberately deprived economically and educationally, the majority will lack the resources or the will to resist oppression by the white minority. The smaller the white minority, the greater the need to oppress the non-white majority. When the white minority is greatly outnumbered, they will feel more threatened and more determined to do whatever they deem necessary, no matter how cruel, wicked, unjust, or immoral, to maintain their economic, educational, and political domination over non-whites. More non-white children with a white parent, NWWP, in America will not reduce or eliminate racism, just like the election of the first identifiably black president in 2008 did not reduce racism. In fact, Obama's election has increased overt racism and resentment from the white collective. The non-white person with a white parent, NWWP, historically has been used by the white minority as a buffer between privileged whites and oppressed non-whites because he or she is more likely to promote white supremacy than oppose it since their white side offers more privileges. The black person with a white parent is more likely to have a white mother, to be raised by a white mother, and to grow up without their black birth father. They are more likely to be white identified since most children are more sympathetic to their mother's side and are more likely to distance themselves from their black side and are more likely to marry and breed with whites. The same is true for the black person with a white father and a white identified black mother. Since most white identified blacks with a white parent usually prefer white lovers and spouses, the so-called browning soon becomes more beige than whiter by the second or third generation. Contrary to the melting pot myth, more interracial breeding between blacks and whites actually lengthens and strengthens the reign of white supremacy. destroys black genetics and reduces the overall black population, which are the main reasons the white entertainment industry promotes interracial sex for blacks. The melting pot of the races began around the northern perimeter. The end result was always the same. The blacks were pushed to the bottom of the social, economic, and political ladder whenever the Asians, meeting whites, and their mulatto offspring gained control. This scheme of weakening the blacks by turning their half-white brothers against them cannot be overemphasized because it began in the early times and it became the universal practice of whites and is still one of the cornerstones in the edifice of white power. Chancellor Williams, Destruction of Black Civilization, Chapter 2, Ethiopia's Oldest Daughter, Egypt, page 61. No son to carry on his name. After 2 years of living together, Bernard's white girlfriend Becky becomes pregnant. When he finds out they are having a boy, he is thrilled because he will finally have a son to carry on his name. The first time Bernard lays eyes on his son, he is shocked by the pale skin and brown hair. It never occurred to him that the baby would look more like the mother than the father. As the son grows older, the pale skin and the straight hair never gets any darker or kinkier like he secretly hoped it would. 2 years later, he and Becky separate. Bernard sees his son Seth, who is 3 years old, only a few times a month instead of every night. Whenever he brings his son around his family, everyone makes a fuss over him, but Bernard can't shake the disconnect he feels towards the gray-eyed boy with straight brown hair. He tells himself that it shouldn't matter what his son looks like. It's still his blood, so Bernard resigns himself to do right by his son. The years pass quickly. To Bernard's dismay, Seth shuns the black kids at his grammar school in favor of the white kids. Bernard tells Becky it's important for Seth to know his black culture, but after a heated argument, Becky says Seth is her son too, so why should his black culture be more important than her white one? Bernard tries to instill some black pride into Seth, but his son clearly isn't interested in his father's lessons. It's also clear that Seth doesn't identify with black people at all. The pretty white baby has turned into a white stranger who prefers white music and can't dance or keep step with the rhythm. Behind Bernard's back, his relatives shake their heads and some privately ask, "What kind of name is Seth for a black boy?" Bernard suspects that Becky and her new white husband are deliberately playing down or outright ignoring Seth's mixed heritage and prefer to pretend he is all white. Permanently soured on interracial dating, Bernard relocates to another state and marries Aretha, a black woman, and has a daughter with her. He invites Seth, now in his second year of high school, to spend the summer with him, Aretha, and his half-sister Deborah, but Seth politely declines. He says his stepfather, who owns a speedboat, is teaching him to water ski. Bernard knows he can't compete with that. He never even learned to swim. The white son and the black side of the family drift even further apart after Seth graduates from high school. Bernard's attempt to bond with his son over the years hits an impasse. Seth is nothing like the sons of his sisters and friends who are into all that is black. Bernard hates to admit that he is envious of his nephews with their cool fade hairstyles and fun-loving personalities who represent the kind of son he secretly wishes he had. The years pass. Seth graduates from college and gets a job at his stepfather's company and a fiance, the daughter of a white businessman. Bernard is not surprised that he, his wife, and daughter are the only black people at the 150-plus guest wedding. Bernard is positive that most of the guests have no idea who he is and assume Becky's white husband is the father of the groom. For his son's sake, Bernard swallows his anger and humiliation and stays in the background. He has a thought that will haunt him for years to come. His only son's children and grandchildren, Bernard's grandchildren and great-grandchildren, will talk white, act white, and be white. Since he and Becky never married, Bernard's family name, legacy, and bloodline will be wiped out by the next generation. If the current suicidal trend of black males feverishly breeding with white females continues, black males will eventually accomplish what slavery, racism, sterilization, the Tuskegee experiment, lynching, castration, crack cocaine, segregation, discrimination, malt liquor, and the prison industrial complex, PIC, have failed to do. Wipe out future black generations. End of story.
Context of white supremacy. Audio segment number one, doing the book club a little bit early. Yoga again. But doing the book club early to not shirk our duties. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Feverish. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Question for folks who dialed in with a hand up. The segment on Rufus, talking about the area of entertainment. The people who read, listened to the narration of that portion of the text, the character Rufus, who made the pitch about a satire poking fun at fat white women, did that sound like, or do you have a feeling of compassion, a feeling of, oh, wow, I feel bad for Rufus. He's a victim of racism, white supremacy. Is that the way that you feel hearing the fictional account of Rufus with the white Hollywood executives? Question. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, lines should be open. If you have other thoughts, questions, proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. So I can't agree with the Rufus chapter. I thought it was a little bit cartoonish, I guess. You know, like with the yippies and the yes-ums and stuff like that. No, it definitely does not make you want to feel sorry, especially listening to it. It kind of makes you feel like, you know, well, oh, well, he's at least getting paid. And even like with, I did like the part about the white executive, because I feel like, you know, that is, you know, that part is definitely seems like it's really realistic. And does a little bit the chapter take away from the main thought of the book, especially throughout the rest of the book, where, you know, just keeping our focus on white people, the white supremacists rather, and not the victims who are victimized into either wearing the dresses and doing, like, you know, the Medea and stuff like that. And even like there was the really long rundown of all the black males who were in different movies, which I can agree with, like, you know, that these black males, they are definitely, you know, being victimized to degrade the image of, further degrade the image of black females. And I didn't even know about the Virginica one. So, you know, this is something that it seems like, and that was Keenan on Saturday Night Live, if I'm not mistaken. And it seems like this is something that they have to keep doing every year. And one thing I can definitely agree with is that you didn't have a Mrs. Doubtfire every year. You don't have a white man in a movie, you know, dressing up like a woman, or even like some of them, they do actually have secret fetishes of putting on heels and stuff like that. You don't really have that every year, coming out with something new, or just a perpetuation of it. I guess I've been talking for a little while, so I'll beat my line. Thank you.
Spectacular narration from Red in Nevada, who apparently survived the one-year anniversary of white terrorist Stephen Paddock's shooting that happened a year ago. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, If you have commentary you would like to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Natalie Hurst.
Greetings, Ivy. Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers and listeners online. My initial and current thought is with the Rufus, definitely not sympathy that it is, in my view, it's name calling, like Uncle Ruckus. I think that that name is a play on that name, that Rufus is a play on Uncle Ruckus. I could be wrong about that, but I still think it's name calling. Also want to say, as far as men, about women just being trashed for, you know, our sexual practices and that not happening to men, that's not just men's fault. Women join in that as well, and we trash each other for our sexual habits, and we make excuses for men, saying men are going to be men and things like that. Women seem like they're only portrayed as victims for dating white men. Black women are portrayed as only victims for dating white men, and we're only talking about it in the context of our victimization and what white men are doing to us. But that doesn't happen for black men. Black men are just seen as just perpetrators for dating white women, and there's not a lot of dialogue, if any, on their victimization. And Queen Latifah and Viola Davis, they kissed women in movies, and there's no mention of that. Just, you know, men putting on dresses, but when women kiss other women in movies and plays, Fantasia did that in a play. Obviously, Whoopi Goldberg did that in Color Purple. There's just no mention of that. It's just all about what men are doing. And black men are not throwing black women under the bus, which Shemaine and the rest of that, white people are throwing us under the bus. Black men, just like black women, are confused and don't really know what's going on and don't know that our images are being trashed to justify harming us. black women just aren't, you know, accused for our roles in movies and things of that nature. Black women, you know, also, just like you talk about how black men are effeminized in movies and things of that nature, well, black women are as well. And they play masculinized roles where they, like you see, how can I put this? Just like you see black men with earrings and all that stuff, you see black women partially bald or fully bald. And now you see a trend of that, of people copying that because of what they see on TV. Just a couple more things I want to say. White people don't see black men as rapists. They just propagate that to justify harming them. And Norm Stamper was practicing racism when he said that white men are, or that white people are afraid of black people. They're not. They just propagate that to justify harming us. I mean, he talked about how he beat us up and had his nigger knocker and all of that. That's it for now. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Man, I wish that was the quote. Much obliged, Ivy. I wish that was the quote Norm Stamper was known for first, not the black males, dark and all that. That's fine. But the first quote should be, don't forget your nigger knocker. That is the one people should have associated first and foremost with Mr. Norm Stamper, suspected race soldier. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have comments, questions, thoughts to share. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
Yes, may I be heard?
Mr. Demery Four, yes, sir.
Yes, greetings, Gus. Greetings to the other callers and listeners. I was kind of surprised. I just called in to check. Can you have it? So, you know, I kind of just ad-lib here, but the superstar, the black superstar, singer, entertainer, Rufus Murphy, I don't think it's any sympathy for him, because I think the fictional character kind of shows us that regardless to what position you may have monetarily, you know, the way that the collective white majority views you is the same as if you were any other common nigger. And he found out when it dawned on him, you know, he said he felt like kicking his own black butt. You know, and if you think about it, a lot of times, see, racism is cunning and deceptive. And a lot of times it'll be practiced on you before you even realize what had happened. And then you have second thought, like, man, I should have handled that differently. But like I said, Rufus gets no sympathy. He learned the hard way. White people can show you better than anybody can tell you anyway. And what was interesting about the interracial, I agree with most of the interracial con game, but I noticed that the authors were saying, you know, with the statistics, that overall, the big picture is very few of these interracial relationships to speak of. And then why would there be a lot of commotion among non-whites and blacks to date the small amount of white people that's interested in dating them anyway? And then they give a illustration how non-white people are feverishly seeking to have sex with these people. So, you know, I think that you, I don't think that the interracial relationships are healthy. I think that calling them tragic relationships is probably closer to the truth. It's no way you could imagine every scenario that you run into. She gave some of them, and especially with the kids, you know, I was thinking about Grace Jones when she was talking about this one guy. She married a white guy, and her son was mixed, and then he married a white girl. And I saw her holding her grandchild, and she was a heavy melanated black person, and she had an all-white grandchild. And then I think her brother was gay, and it was only two of them. So as far as that name goes, I guess, you know, they actually will be non-existent anymore. So the situation really does play itself out exactly the way she said it. But, you know, we have to be careful. I think that maybe I didn't hear it correctly, but it seemed like that the authors created another classification, a racial classification, in WWP. You know, to my knowledge, of white people do the classifying. I don't know if I can follow that logic, but I can certainly, you know, see her point about the less melanated people, you know, lighter skinned black people being confused and acting as a buffer between whites and blacks. But I'll mute my line on that, Gus. Thanks for taking the call.
Much obliged, Mr. Demery Four. Again, on at an irregular time because my yoga teacher training schedule will commence again tomorrow and disrupt the broadcasting schedule for this Friday. And wanted to make sure we got the book study done for the week to not miss out. So at minimum, it'll be in the archives. And then the folks that are with us live, ready to roll. No problem. I'll keep an eye out for other folks if you have thoughts, comments, if you want to share a thought or two as we proceed. I had said when we started this book that I would not comment that way, that I could just play audio commentary from Pam and share her thoughts. We talked about this book and her other books repeatedly on the program, and you know, we could just allow her voice to be present for the broadcast. And I had every intention of committing to that until I read some of the portions from this week's text and I remembered. To start with, VGQ, Victims Guarantee Qualified, again, it is not required that any non-white person, any victim of racism, have agreement with any other victim's position on white supremacy. You don't have to agree with what I say. You don't have to agree with Mr. Fuller, Dr. Welsing, Dr. Cambon, Pam, anybody. You don't have to find agreement. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for a solution, permanent solution to the problem. All of that said, it was after a considerable amount of thinking and praying and ruminating and doing some yoga. And in fact, even it came back from yoga instructor said, integrity. You do try to have integrity in your postures, but even beyond, you try to have some integrity. And I felt that as a journalist, as an attempted counter-racist, it would be better for me to have integrity and voice staunch disagreement as opposed to remaining quiet and just saying, oh, well, I miss Pam, so I will not say anything. Pam and I had ferocious argument about this here. It was not on the air. You all didn't hear this. But when I say ferocious, this went on for like hours over the phone, over this right here, what we just heard in the text. We did not agree on everything. There's no non-white person in the known universe, alive or dead, where we agree with everything. But this particular subject, wow. Oh, wow. All I can say, it did not happen on the air. I really try to avoid conflict. I had so much respect for the work that Pam did, how much of her time and energy, life force she invested in her counter-racist grind and the books and the blog and all of that. I tried to have her on the program as much as I could and promoted her work. But I mean, in terms of just even integrity, the cows, we've been here for 10 years, integrity on that. I don't think anybody could listen to any random 50 programs that we've done, any random 100 programs that we've done over 100 years and think that black love is very high on Gus's list of, you know, yes, this is how he conceptualizes going about the business of counter-racism. In fact, I'll even pause right there. If there is a definition for the term love in this text, if you could point out what page it's on, that's mega, because there's so much confusion about that word. If anything, if you've listened to this program emphasizing the importance of words, correct use of terms. So many terms are confusing. That's a big one. I know that one is in the word guide. The word love, that was deliberate. The audio of Mr. Fuller that was playing at the beginning of the program where he said, when I hear people say black love, I cringe. That is about the same thinking logic that Gus has. And the reason that I'm saying all that, obviously, that's in the title of the text. I generally, consistently for the past decade, have encouraged approaching this problem being logical. Pam and I, in fact, didn't just have one argument, heated argument about this here subject. We had more than one during that series. And this was so long ago, I had totally forgotten it. This is what happens when you end up doing a trip, end up thinking about this person's life and times for all of that. I totally forgot because this was so long ago. This was like, oh my God, we're talking 6 years ago when all of this happened. But now that I've had to read the book and think about what all that was, yes, we had a huge disagreement about this. During that exchange, and the spirit of Pam is listening, I am sure if I am saying anything that is not truthful, that is not accurate to the best of my victimized memory, where I am not, you know, I'm making an effort to mislead or anything, the spirit of Pam can intervene. But during that exchange on this very subject, Area 8 sexual intercourse, and particularly about black males and white women, Pam conceded, perhaps I'm not being very logical. Perhaps this is a subject matter where I have a difficult time being logical. Anytime a non-white person, even if it's Gus T, says that on this, because sometimes that happens. We are all humans. That happens. Sometimes you just get upset. We get emotional. It happens to me. However, when that happens, I have a problem being logical. I almost am not interested in having a conversation with that person anymore, because once you have let me know that on this particular subject, I might not adhere to logic. Oh, man, we can be all over the place. And that's what I hear happen a lot. When this particular subject comes up, the sexual intercourse piece, we are not on logic at all. We are out in total emotion. And I mean, to go about solving a problem, particularly the difficult problems, you have to have an accurate assessment of the problem. Frequently, emotion disrupts the ability to make an accurate assessment of the problem. The sentence that we ended with, the last sentence particularly, I could pick out a whole lot of things, but that last sentence specifically, she didn't say correction to Mr. Demery Ford, because she didn't say non-white people. She didn't say black people. She said black males, feverish pursuit of white women. Are you kidding me? Like, what is that based on? What is the evidence? This is the exact conversation. This is not gossiping. This is the exact conversation that Pam and I had off the air. Heated argument. What is that based on? What are you even talking about? Particularly when you just gave the information. It's not a whole lot of these marriages going on. So we're not even talking about that. It's certainly not a whole lot of, we don't even have disagreement there. It's not a whole lot of black males marrying white women. Not at all. Maybe more than black females, but I mean, very tiny numbers of that happening, period. So we move that to this. I certainly, as one of the majority, super majority black males who have never and will never marry a white woman, I certainly am not going to entertain a whole lot of dialogue about that one. That's a very small number of black males doing that. So boop, move that to the side. So if we're just talking about sexual intercourse, no, even the word feverish, when I heard that in a book that's supposed to be about black love, and she says this is about being sympathetic towards black people and seeing them as victims, black males feverishly pursuing, I stopped and I said, let's look up the word feverish. Always best to ask the author. Maybe I should have asked her on the program, what do you mean feverish? And again, the evidence. But I look up the word feverish, having or showing the symptoms of a fever, displaying a frenetic excitement or energy. And I say, wait a minute, well, let's see, frenetic. So you look up the word frenetic. Fast and energetic in a rather wild and uncontrolled way. So insert that back in. So black males displaying a wild and uncontrolled excitement about white women? Really? Wild? Uncontrolled? That's the way that racist man and racist woman have talked about black men, talked about black males like Emmett Till. For years, decades, that's the way that they were discussed. When I saw statements like that in the book and heard that repeatedly, I said, what in the world? This is really unbalanced in the way that you are presenting this. It's not even accurate. I mean, forgetting the, it's not even accurate. It's not even logical. When I stopped and I said, beyond it's not accurate or logical, I've said for years on this program, strive for accuracy. We are in a system that is about deception. Strive for accuracy. I don't think you have lots of black males. Where's the evidence that you have tons of black males in feverish pursuit of white women? I said, in fact, what I've concluded just looking at the evidence, I think you've got more non-white females, black females, having sexual intercourse with white men than black males with white women. That's the conclusion that I've come to. And in fact, that's the conclusion that Mr. Fuller came to. That's one of the audio segments of Pam that I played where she said, very first time she was on this program in 2010, she heard Mr. Fuller talk about that, black females having sex with white men, and she turned off the audio. She said she could not continue to listen. I go back and connect that right with the logic. Not being able to be truthful. They're all areas where we have sensitivities. They're all areas where we're victims. But that right there, I see that pattern consistently. Like, oh man, if it's going to be abusive and punitive and the way that we're talking about black males being victimized, being exploited sexually, if it's going to be talked about in a punitive and demeaning manner, and then we come back when it's happening. And this, oh my God, we talked about this. We talked about this. It would be totally different if Pam had a whole bunch of black male brothers who married white females. Maybe we could have a different conversation. That's not the case. She talked about this on the program. I had to talk about this reading the obituary. She had a lot of black sisters who married white men. I've had to have this conversation, and I mean, off the air, I've had this conversation repeatedly. I don't have that sympathy for black females when they come to gripe about black males with white men. There are lots of black females having sexual intercourse with white men too. I had to come on this program this year and I said the cute black female that was in class, oh, you went out and kicked it. Oh, looks like she might have a white boyfriend. I didn't come on and call her names and curse her out. I said that repeatedly about non-white and black females in class. I've not come on and been nasty and called them names. They're victims of racism. That's the way it should be discussed on both sides. This is the exact conversation that I had with Pam and saying it's not balanced in the way that you are presenting this. And that is super incorrect, especially if it's going to be in a book that's supposed to be about black love. And the hypocrisy, man, to have had this conversation a whole lot of times with black females who have had sexual intercourse with a white person, and then you're going to turn around and talk like a black male who has done the same thing as some sort of demon or should be despised and called like, oh, no, 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 no. The hypocritical aspect. And again, that goes right back to the very first audio segment that that I played the very first time Pam was a guest on the program, where she said when Mr. Fuller talked about that, pieces of a puzzle, Renethia Tate, secret, what is not being discussed, black females having sexual intercourse with white males. And she said she turned it off. She said it took away the moral high ground. This is exactly what Pam said. It took away that moral high ground of thinking that we were somehow better. We talked about all of this on the program. And in fact, I can give context on this because even though Pam and I had a huge argument about exactly what I'm saying now, it didn't happen on the program. However, it reverberated out into the program. I just said, Renethia Tate, Pam put in tireless work supporting this program, coming on this program to visit, to share her views, promoting, blogging about us online, financially contributing, like superstar investor. No doubt about it. For years, for the entire time that we knew about her, for 7 years, 2010 until her passing, she got Renethia Tate's contact information. That is the only reason we had Renethia Tate on the program, who was just with us in June to talk about the royal wedding, royal tragedy, all of that. When we got Renethia Tate on the program, in her book, she says, I wrote a review of the book. She says there are more black females having sexual intercourse with white men than the other way around, black males with white women. I asked her about this on the program the first time that she visited us at the end of 2012 because of the disagreement that Pam and I had. I could be wrong. Actually, I can't even concede that on this one. I am not incorrect on this one, period. Black males and black females are having sex with whites, period. That should be discussed in the same manner both ways if they're both victims and being exploited, unless I'm being in error, not logical. I'm not conceding I'm incorrect. It's the same thing I said to Pam. Anyway, I asked Renethia Tate that question on the program, and she gave her response as to how she came to the conclusion that more black females were engaged in this sexual activity. That's what her whole book is about, why this is happening, why they're victims because of this, not calling them names, and all of that. Pam called into that program. That's the setup for the sound clip that I'm playing to add further context for, you know, why I had to speak up this week and say something. That's the context. So you can pay attention to her responding and questioning. She's, in fact, before she even gets to her question, she goes immediately to Renethia Tate. And her early, the only reason I didn't play it is I'd have to play a whole lot of time with somebody else speaking. So this is Pam focused. But Pam immediately, she responds to Renethia Tate saying, hey, I think more black females are having sex with white men and, you know, they're victims. And then going on, that's what her whole book is about, pieces of a puzzle. We've discussed it repeatedly. Pamela Evans Harris, full name, dialing in. This is 2012. Calling into the cow, she gives her thoughts, her response at first, and then she gets a question, a little back and forth, archives of Pam, context of white supremacy. Oh, it's taking me a moment to get the audio segment. Might have to give one a moment to get the audio segment there. Yep, might take a moment to get the audio segment. I might have to wait to play it a little bit later in the broadcast, but I will make sure that we have it together from Ms. Tate's visit in 2012 while I'm scrambling to get the audio segment. Do any folks have a comment, question that they would like to share if I'm talking wacky or not even making sense? In fact, even before I get that, I would even pick out, because I did have other notes. I could have made my point even stronger by just picking out more cases, illustrations. And if we have any folks here, any black females here, because it was stated in the book in an earlier section, not what we read today, it was stated that black females were left to pick up the pieces after the black males had run off with white women. If we have listeners here, black females, where that's your story, a black male that you were with, you all had children together, and he left you, he abandoned you, a la Waiting to Exhale, to go get him a young white woman, then let's dial in, let's hear that. If it's an epidemic of that sort of thing happening, I don't think that's the case. But if that is the case, feel free. And I say that because I have a difficult time even accepting this as logical. You can't come on one hand and tell me that black females are single because most of the black males are broke and down low and don't have a job and worthless, and then say at the same time that, oh my God, the biggest problem in the world is black males running off with white women. Like, what in the world? Like, this does not make logical sense at all. But the pattern in the book, I gave the anecdote of Rufus. If you think that's an example of, you know, talking about a black person with patience, they had the anecdote about Bernard, where what happens, him chasing a white woman. They had the anecdote about the black male on the date, where he wanted his black female date to shake her hair like a white woman. And then she responds, her retort, she says, if you do, and mocks his bald spot on his head. That was another anecdote. We got the anecdote about Miranda. That was the black female who lost her job. She was white identified. I even paid, and that's exactly what I did with Pam. That's why I thought about this, and I just said, I'm going to have some integrity and say the same thing that I said to Pam in 2012, because it's exactly what I said to her. How in the world you have that anecdote of Miranda? It's compassionate. It's like, oh my gosh, look what happened to her. She gained all this weight. She lost her job. She was white identified. Like, oh man, is that how you feel when you read about Rufus? Is that how you feel when you read about this black male who asks his black date, ooh, I want you to shake your hair like one of those white women, like Julia Roberts in the movie? Do you feel compassionate? Do you think of him as a victim? Like, no. In fact, in the same book, black males get blamed for the beauty standards, the racist beauty standards that black females and black males are subjected to. She said that black males are partly culpable for all of that. Pointed all of this out. It was no way I could say all of that with, it was no way I could listen to all of this and not speak up at some point, because I had to speak up to Pam at some point off the air. Anyway, I'll get the Renethia Tate audio before we roll. Did other folks have commentary? Anyone who wants to speak up if they feel Gus has been in error? not making sense, illogical.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I just had a question. And that's, I feel like with the whole comparison of who is having sex with racists more, I just feel like, where is this, where who is being sampled? Like, where is the data being collected? Because I feel like if, on one hand, if, let's say, if Black women are lying because they feel, I don't know, they feel some type of way about sharing the information, and that's the only thing that I'm kind of having issues with. Like, we can't really say, I'd much rather it be, like, you know, 50-50 than to say, okay, well, one side is doing it more, when we just don't have that actual data, unless I'm talking crazy. That's the only thing that I wanted to say. Thank you.
Totally logical. Excellent. That is in the sound clip. Well, it's not in the sound clip. It's in the program the first time that Renithia Tate came on. And again, Mr. Fuller came to this conclusion with different logic than Renithia Tate. So they don't have the same way that they explain how they came to that conclusion, nor do I. So if you listen to that program with Renithia Tate, she does explain how she came to that conclusion, where she got the data from. It is very quick and simple. And in fact, Pam didn't even have a refute for it. That's why I said I wanted to play the audio, because there was no refute. I don't think there is one. Anyway, Mr. Fuller, I guess you could call him to get the data. I think he's explained it before. Either way, that's not even a point to bog down on. You could take it 50-50, and that would be fine, too, as long as, fine, everybody's going to be talked about as a victim when we discuss. That would be fine, too, but those are at least some prominent folks who I do know have come to a conclusion. No, I don't think it's 50-50. I think it's a little bit more Black females doing this, but either way, they're still victims.
Yes, my dear.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I, you know, as you were talking, I remember I called in one show. That's when I was trying to get more information about, interracial dating or sex. And, you know, I asked a question, why would Black women prefer white men? And Pam kind of got on. She said, do you mean why would white men prefer Black women? And I, you know, I just kind of gave in and said, yeah, you know. But actually, my question, you know, was answered later, you know, after I read Renithia Tate's book about, you know, some Black females may feel protected with a white man, or in a system where a Black male can't provide protection. And a lot of times, maybe economical desires or whatever that the female has, then she'll try something new. You know, I was looking for something along those lines, you know, and I got my hair blown back, and I always thought that maybe, you know, that it was something personal, you know, because you can kind of see it in a book concerning, you know, the difference between the Black males interacting with white females rather than Black females interacting with white males. And I'll mute my line on it.
For sure. Should only be a few seconds. If other folks have questions, feel free. Ivy, did you have commentary?
I'm actually looking up the data right now, but what I wanted to say, and I wonder if Black men, if they, for lack of words, feel this way or have observed this. What I have observed, I have only brothers for no one, and I have not observed Black men chasing non-Black women at all. What I have seen and what I have observed is non-Black and white women chasing Black men. I have never seen a group of people being chased more than black men. I don't know what the reason for that is. Maybe the non-black women and the white women do realize the fact, undisputable fact, that you guys are the most gorgeous human beings on earth. But I just wonder, do black men see the way how they are just pursued, whether it's just directly coming up to you and asking you for your phone number or making eyes at you so that you will come and approach them. Just what I have seen is just this thirst. And I don't see black women doing that to you all. I see us just kind of, I guess, chilling and I guess waiting for you, like pretty much everyone else seems to do in their own different groups. But I just wondered if you guys noticed that all the other women of other groups except black women, that they are just chasing you, and that no other group is being chased the way that you are. And ultimately, the reason why we don't marry white men as much is because usually the woman is pursued and they're not pursuing us. It's like it seems like the people who want us the most are black men. And as far as white women, nobody really wants them. And that, you know, white men, they do go to them for white supremacy. But I'll just conclude with asking one more time, if the men see how non-black and white women chase you off. I'll mute my
A black male, I do not feel chased. I generally just feel terrorized and threatened by everybody generally, but certainly not chased. And even if there is that sort of interest, it seems like there's some sort of danger. Like Bill Cosby, I said that's been my answer to so many questions of like Bill Cosby, I'm so traumatized. I have the Renethia Tate audio segment, so if there are other males, black males, who want to answer Ivy's question, we'll have time to do so. We still have the second audio segment. We might go a little over today, which is fine, but I knew I had considerable things to say. That said, this is Pamela Evans Harris calling in. Renethia Tate, author of Pieces of a Puzzle, was actually the guest, but Pam called in, as she often did, and she... I actually went out of order, so the segment that I played to begin the program, that was at the end of Renethia Tate's visit. This is actually in the middle, right when we had callers first dial into the program. Bing! Pam got her on the line. So this is Pam 2012.
Context of white supremacy. We have folks that dialed in, and Justice, she has some other questions as well. I want to pick up some of the listeners' questions, and then we'll get Justice's additional questions as well. I know SDOT, I saw your hand first. The only reason I'm breaching protocol is because the person who is most responsible for us being able to do this program would be Pam. She worked tirelessly for years, and I mean years. We were working trying to find Miss Tate to get her on the program. She found Pieces of a Puzzle, and both of us were just like, oh man, this is incredible. We need to get this information out. And she really stayed on the grind. She was relentless in just looking, trying to find as much information as she could. And so I want to make sure that she has time to ask questions and comment. And she is one of the few non-white people who is also talking about this. She has also seen what a tragedy it is for non-white people to be sexually involved with white people. She also has written a book on this subject, The Interracial Con Game, and she references your work in her publication on this same subject matter. Pam, your line should be open. Good to hear from you. Thank you for all your work in making the program happy. I hope making the program happen. I hope it was worthy of all your hard work.
Oh, good evening, Gus, Ms. Tate, Justice. Absolutely. I was super excited when I found out you were going to be on the program. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you for writing that book. I'll make it real quick because I know other people want to ask you questions. You said that there are more black women on the planet, which I would take to I would extend that to say there are probably more black women in the United States than black men. The thing I'm concerned about is the media And you're absolutely right when you say we get a lot of our thinking and direction from the television. I'm concerned because the media over the last couple of years has played on that fear of black women, that there's a shortage of black men, that black men don't want us. You know, they show this imagery of black men with white women, which is one of the reasons I think a lot of us assumed that black men were more sexually engaged with white women than black women with white men, because of the imagery. I personally don't know how I feel about the numbers, but my opinion isn't really that important in this case. I just wanted your ideas about when they play on the fears of black women, they're pushing black women into the beds of white men as sexual playthings with all this media hype about finding a white man moving up. What did they say one time was don't date down, date up or something. You know, a lot of this image, a lot of this media hype trying to push black women toward white men to be sexually steward again, as we've been over the last 400 years. Do you have any ideas on how we can get more black women to understand the dangers of interracial sex? I'd be totally happy to help you promote your book. I know it's on Amazon. So anything that I can do that would help you promote your book or display? Any ideas, any suggestions you have? Any thoughts?
Well, I think black females are, the code tell us that, because the young black females, as interviewed in the book, were getting involved with white men because they were having financial challenges. So I think that the code tell us that we should ask white people for what we need. Mm-hmm. Okay, you talked about the media pushing us into that fear. So some of us are involved with white men because of the money, because mm-hmm. we got kids and we are out there mm-hmm. with these children and we're trying to survive. So I think that we need to ask white people, just ask them. We ought to ask them for what we need. But that doesn't mean we're supposed to go to bed with them or let them touch on us. But we are supposed to ask them for what we need, because they are the ones in charge. They are responsible. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right? I'm not saying they're going to tell you yes, but usually they have to provide. So they provide jobs for us to go to. But what I'm saying is do everything you can do before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. So what was the other question?
I'm sorry, I know I threw a lot of hodgepodge at you. I was just would love to encourage more people to read your book, and I was wondering, is there anything that we can do, I can do, to help promote your book?
I'll pause it there. Pam was working to promote her work. I said that before, she worked tirelessly. It wasn't just this program, but it was a myriad of broadcasts or a myriad of writers and folks that were trying to do work, black people that were trying to do work, constructive work against racism, that she would try and promote, encourage, motivate as best she could. That was a standard trend. But I think that even that exchange right there got at Mr. Demery Forrest's question to some degree about the moving up or doing better, getting a white man. Something new keeps being said. Shania Latham, wasn't that a flick that came out in the 2000s? I don't know if that got mentioned in the text, but yeah, I guess that would be another one of those interracial flicks promoting that way of thinking. Incidentally, I also did want to get in. We do have audio segment number two, but incidentally, even though Pam and I did have a pretty massive disagreement, like 1.5, 2 basically on this topic, obviously it was not to the point where, you know, we were name calling and coon this and, you know, that sort of thing did not take place. And she continued to come on the program for years afterwards. So, you know, we were able to have some counter-racist code did not get violated too much even then, even though we did have very intense disagreement. And I'm just repeating a lot of the things that I said to her then. Now, any other thoughts? Folks need to get in. Second audio segment. Grand. We will get to audio segment number two. Black love is a revolutionary act. Pamela Evans Harris, audio segment number 2.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Niccolo Machiavelli, 1469 to 1527. What act brings your enemy closer than sexual intercourse? Umoja. Interracial sex between whites and non-whites equals the systematic destruction of non-white people. Aborigines make up about 2% of Australia's population, but they suffer disproportionately high rates of imprisonment and ill health. Source: Aboriginal Children Starving, Welfare Workers Say, by Phil Mercer, BBC News. The original native people that once populated Australia have become a micro-minority in their own nation due to European colonization and interracial sex with whites, which has led to the cultural, psychological, and genetic destruction of the Aboriginal people. This dynamic has played out for hundreds of years whenever non-whites and Europeans cross paths, from the Native Americans of North America, the Fuji people, Fuji Islands, South America, Latin America, Haiti, the Aboriginals in Australia, the original Hawaiians, South Pacific, to millions of African slaves held in bondage. Interracial sex between whites and non-whites always leads to non-white educational, economic, and political oppression, the genetic destruction of non-white populations, and more, not less, racism. The proof: the original Australian Aborigines who once populated Australia are now less than 2% of the population. The Non-White Genocide Scoreboard: 100 million people for North American Indians, blacks, 18 million for the area north of Mexico, 28 million for the African Holocaust. In 1910, the total population of North American Indians was about 400,000, down from about 18 to 19 million in 1492. David Stannard, An American Holocaust. The Indian was thought as less than human or worthy of only extermination. We did shoot down defenseless men and women and children in places like Camp Grant, Sand Creek, and Wounded Knee. We fed strychnine to red warriors. We did set whole villages of people out naked to freeze in the iron cold of Montana winters. And we did confine thousands in what amounted to concentration camps. The Indian Wars of the West, 1934. The Native Americans and the Interracial Sex Connection. The 2009 U.S. Census estimates the Native American population that once numbered in the tens of millions is currently only 1% of the 307 million people in America. Native Americans marry whites at a higher rate, 56%, than any other non-white population in the U.S. If this sad trend continues, the Native American people will eventually breed themselves out of existence. I wish to be acknowledged not as black, but as white. Who but a white woman could do this for me? By loving me, she proves that I am worthy of white love. I am loved like a white man. I am a white man. Her noble love takes me onto the road of self-realization. I marry white culture, white beauty, white whiteness. When my restless hands grasp her white breasts, they grasp white civilization and dignity and make them mine. Black Skin, White Mask, France Fanon, 1952. France Fanon, a trained black psychiatrist, wrote about the feelings of dependency and inadequacy that black people experience in a white world. As a result of the inferiority complex programmed into the minds of the black male, he will try to appropriate and imitate the culture code of the colonizer and his oppressors. Unfortunately, Fanon fell prey to his own diagnosed disease. He married a white female. Myth number 5. Black males are forced to date, marry white females because black females are defective, inferior. This is the most divisive and hurtful myth because it automatically implies that black females are so inferior in character and appearance that a black male seeking an attractive quality mate is forced to date outside his race. Since the majority of black males marry black females, this racist myth, like all interracial myths, fails the ultimate test of logic. The defective black female made me date outside my race. A popular black radio talk program was debating the pros and cons of interracial dating. A 30-something black male caller, Bill, admitted he only dated white women. When the host asked him why, Bill said, "Black girls rejected me in high school because I was too dark." Tom, a white male, told a similar tale when he was interviewed by a computer industry publication. He recalled being shunned and ridiculed by the pretty popular girls in his high school because I was a short, skinny nerd. Tom's best friend John was Asian American and was just as unpopular with the handful of Asian girls at their high school who preferred white males. Instead of dating, John and I spent most evenings and weekends on our passion, writing and debugging computer programs. In their freshman year of college, they wrote a program that was purchased by a major software firm. After graduation, Tom and John started their own software company, and today both men are millionaires. Both men are also married with children. Tom married the same blonde cheerleader type that rejected him in high school. John married an Asian beauty contest winner. Do Tom and John remember being the two most unpopular nerds in high school? Absolutely. Did that experience make them want to get even by rejecting all the women in their races? Absolutely not. Bill's reasons for having a Jim Crow whites-only dating policy was not caused by any teenage black girl who rejected him in high school. It was caused by his black inferiority complex, which explains why Bill is on his third interracial relationship in 5 years, because he is dating white females for the wrong reasons. Bill's need to blame black females for his own behavior is proof he knows his behavior is incorrect. Otherwise, there would be no need for Bill to blame black females or anyone else. Unlike Bill, Tom and John had not been programmed to dislike themselves or their own ethnic group, so they had no need to condemn or reject their female mirror images. Now, you integration-minded Negroes are trying to force yourselves on your former slave master, trying to make him accept you in his drawing room. You want to hang out with his women rather than the women of your own kind. Because only a man who is ashamed of what he is will marry out of his race. There has to be something wrong when a man or woman leaves his own people and marries somebody of another kind. Men who are proud of being black marry black women. Women who are proud of being black marry black men. This is particularly true when you realize these Negroes who go for integration and intermarriage are linking up with the very people who lynch their fathers, rape their mothers, and put their kid sisters in the kitchen to scrub floors. Malcolm X being interviewed by Louis Lomax, 1963. Black male homosexuals are not immune to jungle fever. The same self-hating dynamic is at work for the homosexual black male who prefers homosexual relationships with white males, despite the rampant racism within the white homosexual community. According to Keith Boykin, a homosexual rights activist columnist who frequently writes about the black homosexual community, some black male homosexuals refuse to date black males. Referring to a black male acquaintance, Boykin writes, "He did not want to date a black man. He wanted a white man instead. To catch his eye, a black man would have to be twice as gorgeous and twice as successful as an average white man." Ironically, the self-hating homosexual male who discriminates against other black males is often reluctant to talk about his sexual encounters with white males. He may realize on some level that he is just a sexual object to the racist white male and may later feel he was degraded by the sexual contact. This realization may not deter the most self-hating homosexual black male from seeking white partners because they represent the only source of the white validation he so desperately needs. This is typical of the irrational self-destructive mental illness among blacks infected with jungle fever. Revisiting Dennis Rodman's explanation for dating interracially. Some people say they date people from another race because they don't see color, and that's the way it is for me. I also think it's refreshing for a white woman to be with a black man. That adds something to the relationship. There's more openness, more of a feeling that you don't have to conform to everything society tells you. If I were white, I thought I could be a little happier. I wanted to be white because I was black, and black was never the right color. If we flip Dennis Rodman's contradictory script to explain why some black male homosexuals only date white males, it might read something like this. Some people say they date people from another race because they don't see color, and that's the way it is for me. I also think it's refreshing for a white man to be with a black man. It adds something to the relationship. There's more openness, more of a feeling that you don't have to conform to everything society tells you. If I were white, I thought I could be a little happier. I wanted to be white because I was black, and black was never the right color. Perhaps the defective black female excuse should be expanded to include the defective black male homosexual made me date a white man excuse. White females engaging in interracial sex is white supremacy with a human face. The white female has the psychological and sexual advantages over black males that white males could never have. The white female has more trust and credibility among black males than the white male does. The black male loves, lusts after, and desires the white female. The white female can get away with racism and racial oppression against the black male without arousing the anger and bitterness in the black males that white males do. The white female is in the last stages in her war with the white male. She is better educated than white males. While the white female finishes off the white male, she is in no way ready to give up her white supremacy. The sexual and political rise of the white female over white males must happen through her conquest and dominance of black males. To fend off any threat to white female hegemony, we must dominate niggers sexually. White Female Supremacists, Der Kosmonaut, 1972. Myth number 6. White females are more supportive than black females. White women treat they man like a king, and black women feel they ain't gotta do that shit. Rapper Slim Thug in a Vibe magazine interview, 2010. It's like a white woman told me once, black women treat their men like property. White women treat their men like people, even if they don't always agree. Big Lock, black male poster on black website. These comments are not nearly as surprising as the impressive number of black males who claim they have first-hand knowledge of how white females treat white males, like kings, behind closed doors. However, for argument's sake, if we assume that Slim Thug is correct when he says white women treat they men like a king, why is the white husband, white wife divorce rate over 50%? How would Slim explain the even higher black husband, white wife divorce rate, which is twice as high as the black husband, black wife divorce rate? See Bratter King Study, page 268. If the white female is more supportive than the black female, and the black husband-white wife couples have a higher divorce rate than the black husband-black wife couples, there can be only one logical conclusion. The black male must be the least supportive. It is this kind of false logic that illustrates the dangers of blacks stereotyping other blacks. The black male who sings the praises of white females. Certainly, any black male who has depended on a supportive black mother, sister, aunt, or grandmother for the first 18 years or more of his life, but dares to uplift white females above black females, is suffering from terminal memory loss at best, or is at the very worst a dishonest, dishonorable, and ungrateful individual. Black males who use interracial relationships as a weapon. The threat of having an interracial relationship has become the weapon of choice for the powerless black male to control or punish the uppity black female. He is powerless to limit her educational or economic opportunities. He is powerless to imprison her or make her a social outcast, but he can reject her romantically and make a public nuisance of himself while doing it. Some black males resent black females for their alleged independence, which makes some black males feel they are the only men in America who are not in a superior position over their women. Some black males resent the black female's unwillingness to submit to him as an inferior person because they naively believe the white female willingly submits to the white male. However, if white females willingly submitted to white male domination, there would be no white women's liberation and feminist movements against white male sexism, and there would definitely be no white females having sex with black males. Since the white females are more supportive myth is one of the most divisive and false interracial myths, it is time to define what a supportive female is versus one who is not. Is supportive sharing white wealth with black males? Rich white females do not marry rich or poor black males. With a few exceptions, wealthy white females do not date or marry black males. Since most marriages occur between people of the same ethnic and socioeconomic background, this is not surprising. However, there is one glaring exception, rich and famous black males. Rich and famous black males are the most likely group in America to marry down. Some well-known examples are the stripper and flight attendant wives of Montel Williams, the nanny wife of Tiger Woods, the waitress wife of O.J. Simpson, and the receptionist wife of the late Michael Jackson. What is not surprising is once the former working-class white wives divorce their rich black husbands, they usually take the newfound wealth back to the white community and into the arms of a white male. When the authors attempted to flip that particular script, we were unable to turn up a single example of a rich white female who married a black male equivalent of a stripper, nanny, waitress, or receptionist, or a rich white male who married a black female stripper, waitress, babysitter, or receptionist. We were also unable to find an example of a rich black female who married a white male equivalent of a stripper, nanny, waitress, or receptionist. To add insult to financial injury, rich black male celebrities are almost always excluded from the dating and marriage pool of rich white females who overwhelmingly date and marry white males. Perhaps these affluent white ladies feel that marrying a black male of any economic, educational, or professional status is still marrying down. Unlike their rich white sisters, rich white females have no financial incentive to trade their whiteness for the wealth of a white status-seeking black male. Is support of transforming a black actor like Denzel into a Tom Cruise, Richard Gere, or Brad Pitt? While white females individually might occasionally admire a black male actor like Denzel, they overwhelmingly prefer white males as their sex symbols. Even popular black actors like Denzel are never chosen as the sex symbol for the white female collective. Every black male who has become a sex symbol owes his success to his first and only real fan base, black females. Sadly, all too many black male sex symbols show their gratitude by dating and marrying anyone but a black female. Is supportive seeing black males as social and romantic equals of white males? A 2020 survey on interracial dating. In 2006, on ABC's 2020 TV program, host John Stossel did a special on the book Freakonomics, which revealed the following about interracial dating. White women overwhelmingly prefer white males while dating online 97% of the time. To get the same responses from a white female that a white male would receive, an Hispanic male would have to make $77,000 more than a white male. An unattractive male had to earn $150,000 more than an attractive male. A black male had to make $154,000 more than a white male. An Asian male had to make $247,000 more than a white male. A conclusion. The vast majority of white females, 93%, prefer white males when seeking a serious partner for marriage and reproduction. They, black women, resent our taking their men, but in truth, black sisters, we're after sex, not the ring, and these guys aren't the marrying kind anyway. Susan C. Bacos, a white woman, explains why she prefers black men. Is supportive pulling a brother up the corporate ladder? Thanks to affirmative action, white females are rocketing up the corporate ladder while black males are falling off in record numbers. Black males, regardless of education and experience, have the highest unemployment rate in America, even higher than illegal immigrants who do not speak English. In contrast, white females are the most likely people in America to be employed, even compared to white males. According to the U.S. Labor Department, the biggest beneficiaries of affirmative action programs were white females, who strangely and predictably represent some of the most vocal opposition to the same policies that open employment doors for qualified black males. The number of white females holding executive positions in corporate America with the ability power to hire and fire employees has skyrocketed, but few use that power to employ and promote black males. Unfortunately, these cold hard facts have done little to dispel the myth of the supportive white female among the black male collective who conveniently ignore one more fact. It's sexism, not racism, that makes the upwardly mobile white female hot around her starched white collar. Is supportive accusing black males of crimes they didn't commit? A very incomplete and infamous list of white females who falsely accuse black males of crimes they didn't commit. 1955, Carolyn Bryant, white female, accused Emmett Till, 14, visiting relatives in Money, Mississippi, of whistling at her. Till was beaten, tortured, and murdered by a mob of white males who were acquitted by an all-white jury of males and females, even after admitting they killed Till to make an example of him. 1994, Susan Smith, white female, drove her auto into a lake while the children slept in their car seats, initially reporting to police that she had been carjacked by a black man. 9 days later, after an intense, heavily publicized nationwide search, Smith confessed to drowning her children. 1996, Elise McDessis, white female who prosecutors allege had conspired with her white husband, Eddie, to file a false sexual harassment suit against the Navy. Earlier, it was claimed that Elise made two videotapes in which she accused several co-workers at the Oceana Naval Air Station, Virginia. One of the accused was Quincy Brown, 37, a black male employee. Prosecutors allege that Elise and Eddie McDessis lured Brown to their apartment to have sex with Elise, during which Elise asked to be tied up after the sex act. Eddie later claimed to police that he was knocked unconscious and awoken to find Brown raping and stabbing his wife. He said he shot Brown in self-defense, then called 911. After a 10-year investigation, Eddie McDessis was arrested and charged with the murder of his wife. Prosecutors allege that at his trial, after Brown and caught Brown with his wife, shot Brown to death and stabbed his wife to death. Prosecutors claim that McDessis' plot to get insurance money by first murdering Brown, killing his wife with a knife, washing the knife, then planting it in Brown's hand. On March 2006, McDessis was convicted of two counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. McDessis is planning an appeal. 2007, Amanda Knox, white female American exchange student in Italy, was convicted in the 2007 stabbing death of her British roommate, Meredith Kircher. Knox initially tried to pin the blame on a black reggae club owner, Patrick L., who was arrested for the murder but released after his alibi checked out. 2008, Ashley Todd, white female Republican, claimed that she was assaulted by a black Obama supporter who carved a backwards B on her face. She later claimed she had fabricated, lied, and had assaulted herself. 2009, Bonnie Sweeten, white female, claimed two black men had abducted her and her 9-year-old daughter after a fender bender and stuffed them into the trunk of a black Cadillac. It's a terrifying thing for a community to hear that two black men in a black Cadillac grabbed a white woman and her daughter, said Bucks County District Attorney Michelle Henry. It was later discovered that the abduction was a hoax and that Sweeten had fled to Disney World with her daughter. Sweeten was later indicted for allegedly stealing $700,000 from her employer, a Bucks County law firm. 2010, Jill Quigg, a white female actress, was charged with burglary after she and a white male accomplice allegedly broke into a neighbor's apartment and blamed the crime on a black man. 2011, unidentified white female, a Catholic nun, falsely reported being raped by a 6'4", 250-pound black male, but later recanted her story, which she created to cover up a sexual relationship with a non-white male. How many black males have been convicted or executed after being falsely accused by white females? The authors were unable to find a single case of a black female who blamed a black male for a crime she committed. Is support of championing the civil rights of black males? Since only a tiny minority of white females get involved in civil rights issues, it is safe and accurate to state that the main issues that negatively impact black males, unemployment, police brutality, unjust incarcerations, inferior schools, and murder by cops, receive little to no support from influential white female-headed organizations or from powerful, high-profile white females. White females also make up the majority of white jurors who convict black males with little or no evidence or acquit white policemen who are accused of beating or murdering unarmed black males. If young white males were dying at the same rate as young black males, that every powerful white female-headed organization in the nation would be using all their financial and political muscle to solve the problem. Is support of pursuing sex with black males under the guise of pursuing justice? It is common for the anti-racism activist white female to be sexually involved with black males, which leads to an obvious question. What is the true agenda of the anti-racist white female activist? Justice or sexual intercourse with black males? Anti-racist white female author Dr. Touchluck revealed a personal story during an interview on the Cal's Internet radio show in August 2010. After a particular black male refused to date her because she was white, she said, "At that time, I could not see why the injury to black women was important, or more correctly, I did not want to care about what this man saw and what black women would feel. I could not grasp why what someone else thought about our potential relationship made a difference." Is supportive opposing the practice of racism? In September 2010, the National Federation of Republican Women, NFRW, held its annual fall board of directors meeting in Charleston, South Carolina, called the Southern Experience. South Carolina Senate President Glenn McConnell, dressed up as a Confederate soldier, flanked by two grinning black males dressed as slaves. Since there was no public condemnation of the racist spectacle by this well-heeled group of professional, educated white females, it is reasonable and logical to assume they not only found African slavery a source of entertainment, it is, quote, possible some actually long for a return to the good old days. Is support of raising white children who will oppose the practice of racism? If white females are the mothers, civilizers, teachers, and the transferers of values for white children, are they teaching white boys and girls to oppose white supremacy or to continue to practicing it to maintain their white privileges? Would raising anti-racist white children be the ultimate form of support by the white female? Rosa Parks, the mother of the Freedom Movement. 9 months before Parks refused to give up her seat, 15-year-old Claudette Colvin refused to give up her bus seat on the same bus system. Parks' act of defiance and her involvement with civil rights leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. helped to launch the national civil rights movement. The unsupportive black female. The flip side of the supportive white female is the unsupportive black female who has raised, loved, nurtured, provided for, protected, and financed the college educations of black boys, often without the assistance of their fathers. The unsupportive black female is the workhorse of every black organization, from churches, homeless shelters, and food pantries to black grassroots organizations and national foundations. The unsupportive black female marches, protests, petitions, donates, and devotes countless black woman hours to assist, defend, finance, and support the rights of black males. An unsupportive black female college student is credited by some with starting the petition that launched a national movement for the Jenna Six, six black teenage boys from Jenna, Louisiana, who were being railroaded into prison for a simple schoolyard fight in 2006. The majority of people who descended upon Jenna, a small dusty Louisiana town, arrived in cars, buses, and planes to rally around six black boys they didn't know from a hole in the ground were black, not white, Hispanic, or Asian females. Black children are dying on the streets of America on a daily basis, yet the response from the supportive white female is silence, even from those with non-white black children. I am a 54-year-old, and I remember the luxury car commercials, and the messages were always the same. Buy this Cadillac, and you'll be a successful man with high status, and you'll be popular with blonde white women. As a little boy, I could never figure out why there was always a white woman with blonde hair sitting in the passenger side of the car. Naturally, when we consider that our black fathers and grandfathers watched those commercials at least 10 times a day before they became grown men, we see that this formula for success and status was still ingrained into the black man's psyche and subconscious. Frank, 54, sales representative, Memphis, Tennessee. Myth number 7. Black males prefer white females because they are more attractive than black females. At the risk of sounding cruel, it is obvious to even the casual observer of the typical black male-white female couple that beauty or even average attractiveness is not a requirement when it comes to white females. In the mind of a white validation-seeking, low self-esteem black male, a white female will always be superior to a black female, regardless of the black female's beauty, intelligence, accomplishments, or attitude, because a black female cannot give him the kind of white validation he so desperately craves because she has no more status than he has. To the self-hating black male, the black female's blackness is a hated reminder of his own failures and secret shame as a powerless black male victim of the white supremacy system. Adding a black female to his romantic equation is too much black self. The value of white females to the low self-esteem, status-seeking black male. According to Dr. Levin, a black psychiatrist, some black males find it hard to connect with the black female because she serves as the symbol of his failure. For the white, status-seeking, low self-esteem, non-white male, be he black, Hispanic, Native American, or Asian, the white female is a highly visible human passport of acceptance into the white world and a soothing lotion for his wounded pride and ego. the physical attractiveness, intelligence, or accomplishments of his white female prize are less important than her white status, which explains why the majority of rich black males who marry white almost always marry down. There is a long list of marriages between wealthy black males and typically unaccomplished, undistinguished, and often unattractive white female actresses, receptionists, flight attendants, strippers, and nannies who bring little to the marital table other than their youth, fertility, and white skin. By possessing a white female, the status-seeking, low self-esteem black male can imagine he is equal to the most powerful and most privileged male in America, the white male. If I were white, I thought I could be a little happier. I wanted to be white because I was black, and black was never the right color. Dennis Rodman, former NBA player. If white supremacy was transformed overnight into a system of purple supremacy and the most privileged females had purple skin and green hair, they would be the most beautiful and the most sought-after females to the low self-esteem, status-seeking, non-purple male. Speaking about an interview with Miss Fairytale, a black female who said she was glad she had a relationship with a white man, Renethia Tate, author of Pieces of a Puzzle, 1997, writes, "Black females will talk or even brag they had sex with black males to everyone, particularly other black females like myself." But she, Miss Fairytale, really did not want to remember or talk about all of her experience, particularly the sex part, with this white man. Miss Fairytale, like most black females who had sex with white men, had a vague feeling that they were either being robbed or raped after these terrible experiences. Myth number 8. Black females are too loyal to black males to have sex with white males. The biggest sex secret in black America, black females having sexual intercourse with white males. Black females often condemn black males who date or marry white females, but some are just as guilty of the same crime, talking black and sleeping white. The white male's shameful history of rape, economic exploitation, and degradation of black females drives some black females to hide their sexual affairs with white males from prying eyes. Black females know many whites and blacks, especially black males, assume a black female who is having sexual intercourse with a white male is either prostituting herself, exchanging sex for money, favors, or material things, or being sexually exploited by the white male, whoring for free. The black female who sexually submits to a white male or a series of white males often discovers she is involved with a racist who has no intentions of making a serious commitment and who dislikes blacks in general. Her biggest fear is being duped into the role of a racist white man's whore, and in most cases, her fears are justified. In fact, most interracial relationships between black females and white males are simply a continuation of the same white supremacy sexual exploitation power dynamic that began during slavery, the inferior black person submitting to the will and sexual exploitation of the superior white person, which often includes verbal and physical abuse. For this reason, some black females often look back on sex with white males with much shame and regret, and may be extremely reluctant to admit any prior sexual involvement with white males. Many black females resent black male-white female relationships because the white female has a stronger hand, more power, and is treated with more respect in the black-white sexual power dynamic than the black female. It is possible for a black female and white male to be attracted to each other for the same reasons any man or woman is attracted to each other, but love is seldom the emotion that fuels the secret sex relationships between black females and white males, or black males and white females. The white male who has sexual intercourse with black females. Some white males keep their sexual affairs with black females a secret for fear of harming their reputation with their white peers and family members. Some white males avoid dating black females even when they are attracted to a particular black female or black females in general for the following reasons: the history of rape of black females by white males, the lower caste status of black females in a white supremacy society, the fear of losing white peer approval, status, and privileges, the fear of rejection by the inferior black female, the fear of not measuring up to the sexually dominant black male, his desire to maintain the racial integrity of his offspring. He is not interested in an interracial relationship with a black female. He is a white supremacist, a racist who understands consciously or subconsciously that ignoring black female desirability is essential to maintaining the superiority of the white female and white male. Despite all of the above, some black females still find the attention of white males flattering and desirable and will have sexual intercourse with a known racist white male. The white-identified black female may put white males on a pedestal regardless of status, physical appeal, or racist attitudes, ignoring the odds are against white males returning the favor. The inferior position of the black female in the white-black interracial dating game. Logically speaking, if the lightest female is the most superior in a white supremacy system, the darkest female must be the most inferior. Following the logic, the black and non-white male who is seeking white acceptance and status will see the black female as the last logical choice. The white supremacy programming of black and non-white males reflects more on their mentality and low self-esteem than it does on the desirability of the black female. Black females who date white men exclusively. The black female, due to her artificially created inferior position, may seek alternative forms of validation if black males collectively do not validate her worth. For some black females, an interracial relationship with a white male offers the ultimate white validation, which serves as proof to her bruised and battered ego that she is not the worthless, undesirable creature that white society and some black males have made her out to be. Her uniquely beautiful racial characteristics are often seen as exotic by her non-black admirers, making her feel more appreciated than she is by the males in her own community. The dark and brown-skinned black female who does not fit the black beauty standard, light skin, long hair, European features, may pursue a relationship with the white male for the same reason the devalued white female who does not fit the white beauty standard seeks a relationship with a black male, to be validated as an attractive, desirable woman. Their motto, "It is better to be exotic than be disregarded altogether," should be a clear warning to the white males and black males who oppose interracial dating by the women of their race. Black females who refuse to date non-black males. Overall, black females are less likely to date outside their group than Asian, Hispanic, Native American, and white females. Some detractors claim this is due to the black female's lack of appeal, but the simple and well-known fact is, most black females prefer black males. The hyper-masculine, soulful image of the black male makes it difficult for non-black males to compete in the sexual or romantic arena for the attention of black females, something non-black males are well aware of. A significant number of black females, especially the black female who understands the connection between racism and interracial sex, shun the interracial relationships despite a shortage of black males to marry. They would rather live their lives as a single female than give in to the racist media's interracial propaganda that white is better. The less confused, black-identified black female knows that as long as white supremacy exists, having interracial sex with white males or females makes her part of the problem, not part of the collective solution. And the authors wholeheartedly agree.
Context of white supremacy. Man. Woo! I did not enjoy that at all. Woo! Black love is a revolutionary act. If you have commentary, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'm just bringing this up because it was brought up in an earlier book study. This book suggested that there was such a thing as a male-dominated society, including black males as being part of that male domination. And some of the callers, you know, said they didn't think that was accurate. How can that be if the authors just said that the black unemployment rate is about double approximately what the unemployment rate is for black females? And if the low self-esteem, feverishly chasing white women, black males, if they don't have the power to stop the education or influence the education of black females, how is it a male-dominated society? Certainly, how are black males included in that? Because that was the way it was presented. Male-dominated society, black males, they are part of that male domination. How can that be? That seems to be very
contradictory. Folks who dialed in, the number again, 641-715-3640, decode 564-943, pound, press star 61, if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with commentary, line should be open. If you have commentary, particularly for people, if you have commentary and you did not share, if you haven't spoken at all, you should go ahead and get a hand up now. That way, you know, we won't miss your comments or what have you. And please do not wait till the last minute if, you know, you think you have a question or comment you would like to share. All the folks who dialed in with a hand up, Mr. Demery 4, Ivy, Red in Nevada, line should be open. I will look for other hands on the switchboard.
Ivy here.
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus. It's a contradiction to say that the trashed image of black women, that deters some black men, but it don't deter men of other groups. To say that it's a lie that they don't, that we don't date out as much and marry out as much because we're not being approached. Because this keeps getting emphasized, and I want to speak on it anyway, about the homosexuality thing, again, 10% of homosexual females are black. Only 5% of homosexual males are black. So black women are doing this at double the rate of black men. And I'm going to say this, black female homosexuals, I'm telling you this from experience, are very, very aggressive, and they're very relentless. Like, I've never been treated by men the way that I've been treated by homosexual women. If you show a man that you're not interested in him, he'll just keep it moving. But these homosexual women, they are relentless and determined to impose their sexual confusion on you, and I do not say that to denigrate black women and black homosexual women at all. I'm just telling it like it is from experience, and you can't go anywhere to escape them. They're at the salon, they're just everywhere. And I think that this feminism thing, that has a lot to do with it as well. Like, they're trying to recruit people into their group, and that just this scrutinizing of men being homosexual but not scrutinizing women being homosexual is a matter of feminism as well, because they teach you that everything that you do, whether it's wrong or not, is a man's fault. So if you're a homosexual, it's a man's fault. But if a man's a homosexual, you're hearing it in this book, that if a man's a homosexual, that's just what he chose to do or whatever. Man, I had a black female homosexual, my neighbor, in fact, scratch my car because I rejected her. And this is not just butch looking people, so-called, or ugly, or people who are not, I guess, the average standard of beauty or whatever, or what people typically like. These are pretty and just gorgeous women who are homosexuals. And if anybody is on the down low, we talk all this stuff about the down low. Man, the public discourse is men's sexuality. We don't talk about women being homosexuals. The public discourse is men's, like, homosexuality. We don't talk about that at all. And women, they just try to, we're sitting here and we're looking at men being the conversation about homosexuality, and we aren't saying anything, because again, we've been taught that everything is a man's fault, and we like being like victims like that. And black women, we know that everywhere you go, that we just have this relentless pursuit on us from other homosexual women. Either Pam says she was approached either by one person or several people. Scotty Reed and Blacka talked about this. And I think this is the last couple things I'm going to say. I think that is the reason for this aggressive campaign to put men in dresses, black men in dresses, and to effeminize them, is to get them to catch up and to bring up those numbers where they're closer to ours, because they are, I think, one of the least likely groups of people to be homosexual. And I'm going to just say this. In my view, and I don't say this to criticize anyone, but in my view, this book so far, and this almost over, to me is like a trash, it's just trashing black men, and it's like a hit piece on Black men. Like, even while calling them a victim, you still, about the same things you're calling them a victim about, you are still going back and talking about how it's their fault and how they just want to do this, that, or the other. And there's all this, like, Black men and men, period, a lot of times they admit, I'm almost done, they admit their faults with us, and the things, the mistreatment that they have toward us, if they call us names or they hit us or whatever the case may be. But as far as the mistreatment that we have for Black men, it's like it doesn't even exist, and nobody wants to talk about it, and it's just dismissed. And I just had a question for you, Gus. Did Pam tell you why she has a tough time being logical about this particular subject? And it seemed like to me maybe she had just been kind of socialized into feminism, and that's why. And the last thing I'll just say is that I hope everybody has as great a weekend as possible. I'll meet my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
For sure, Ivy. Again, this is, I had forgotten about the argument completely, right? Like, this happened over 6 years ago. You know, it took, you know, going through and reading this book and remembering, like, oh man, yeah, I did have some major, like, problems with that. And in fact, we had that big falling out, and everywhere, not falling out, but big to do. Anyway, I do not remember, like, the details of why this was such a sensitive matter. You can listen again to that audio clip, because I think some of it is there. The very first time she was on the program, she talked about turning off the radio for Mr. Fuller, because I think that part came back up. Like, I think she did give a little more detail, so I think that might be related. I'll have to think, like I said, I had totally forgotten about this. I mean, if you can imagine that, when you have an argument with somebody where this ends up being like a 2-3 hour dispute, right? Heated dispute for 2-3 hours, and totally forget about it. Be like, oh, it's somebody that you're really good friends with, and then be like, oh yeah, we did have that big, like, brawl of an argument. But I cannot recall specifics about, you know, why this was such. I know the family part, you know, she did, but I mean, even that, like I said, she has sisters. I don't know why that would direct it towards Black males specifically, but that, you know, came up regularly, her talking about how this was in her family. I'm not remembering specific details as to why there would be so much animosity about this directed at Black males, but definitely, and again, the spirit of Pam can intervene if I am being inaccurate at all, but I mean, this is something that I red flag. This is something that I tell people, like, any, because I've had this happen before, and it is always memorable. Anytime that I have someone tell me, I have a difficult time being logical about, whoa, file that immediately, write that down. Whoa, I mean, and this is something that I've referenced. So to answer your question, without, I've already talked too much, I don't remember any more specifics. The first time she was on the program might have more details. And even that broadcast with Renithia Tate the first time around, definitely listen to it, because you'll get to hear more of her than what I played today. Other folks, Mr. Demery for Red in Nevada.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to try to make this quick. Definitely VGQ. And I'm really glad I understand now so much better why we can't discuss Area 8, and I really appreciate that rule. I feel like I try to get away from using anecdotal evidence, because I feel like that's kind of like the problem that I feel like I humbly, or, you know, as best as possible, disagree with some of the things that are being said, because I feel like it's a lot of anecdotal evidence, and I'm not seeing where, okay, well, we don't really know who everyone sleeps with. And I'm not saying that this is, you know, it's like, you can't really depend on, you know, are we going around asking people, are we taking like one city and just applying it to the rest of the world, what have you. I did look up maybe like the world population of how many Black males are in the world versus Black females, which there are more Black females. So if we wanted to go by possibly, you know, okay, well, there's more Black females in the world, so that would mean there's more likelihood of them maybe being gay, and also, or I'm sorry, sleeping with other females and sleeping with more white males. Maybe I can lean towards that, but any anecdotal evidence, I'm not quite understanding where that's coming from. The thing that I want to talk about with the book is I do see how like the parts when we're describing, oh, well, it's a confused black male, just like you were saying, they're not really being referenced as victim. And I guess I didn't catch this before when I was reading it or, you know, like narrating it or whatever. But it does definitely seem like when there's talk of, especially like the supportive versus non-supportive, stuff like that, it's definitely constantly only painting black females in a victim type of light, and then black males as, you know what, I understand that you're supposed to be quote unquote victims, but we're still going to say that, you know, you should still have more, more morals. I guess maybe this might even be some white identification within the writing to try, because if white people have maybe taught us that females are supposed to be, are supposed to have that moral high ground, just like was mentioned before. And that means that we are then, I guess, looking at black males as being immoral and, you know, and being mindless or what have you. So I guess I can kind of see that out in the book. And even when she was talking about, or the authors or what have you was talking about, well, black females, it's still kind of justifying. And that's the problem when I have with people who are speaking about counter racism. But then when they talk about the people of their same, the black people of their same sex, whether it's a black female or a black male, talking about, okay, black male dating or being with white females, or a black female talking about black females being with black male, I'm sorry, being with white males, then it's kind of okay because of, you know, well, the situation. No, it's either not okay for anyone, or it's okay for everyone, or maybe you should just not talk about that at all. I guess the other thing was black females not really caring about if they are racially degraded or something like that, because it's seen as exotic rather than, you know, that's how they kind of get past the whole, oh, well, you know what, I'm going to be with this racist or this non-black person. I thought that was an interesting thing to kind of note. I've not heard of that, but that's anecdotal, so I'll leave that alone, and I'll mute my line. Thank you.
I don't know if you've been listening to The Cows for 10 years, but have you heard any evidence from the programs that you have heard of us being inconsistent with our application about sexual intercourse being incorrect for whites, non-whites?
I apologize if I didn't make myself clear. I definitely didn't mean The Cows. I would have, like, you know, said anything like that. When I listen to other people, I do hear that inconsistency. Like, you know, if using Gus as an example, let's say if Gus were one of these other people that I'm talking about, and I just won't use names, they'll be like, okay, well, Gus will say, well, you know what, black males, they're okay with, you know, dating white females because, you know, at least they'll be able to, you know, get something out of the relationship. But no, the black females who are doing this, no, they are, you know, they're being called different names. And then, or a black female has said this same thing as a black female who talks about racism has said, you know, well, at least with black females, they'll be able to get something in our relationship. Nobody's getting anything out of it. White people are only giving you what they want to give you that they can take back. But to answer your question, I'm sorry. No, I have not heard of that on The Cows. It's applied equally. Everybody's victims. I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Right. I didn't think there was anything incorrect about the way you stated it. I was just looking for an honest review, which I got. Much obliged. Thank you kindly. I was just, you know, making sure that we are being consistent with that application. And I can even give you all a quick backstory. That happened where I did get accused of that. This didn't happen on the air, though, but this happened. I don't know how to. This happened off the air. I'll say it that way. A non-black, non-white female, so-called Asian, accused me of saying that it's incorrect for non-white females to engage in sexual intercourse with white men. And because I have been so consistent in the way that I articulate my views on this for, this was, in fact, this was when the cows was not on the air when this happened. This was 2008. So we weren't even on. So yeah, long time ago. But she, I have been so consistent that others intervene to say, oh no, I have heard that moron talk about this for a long time. And he says it the same way every time. No sex between white people and not. Jesus Christ. I've heard him talk about that so much. That is what got me, or at least for a lot of people, made them pay more attention to the accusation and say, I don't know, this doesn't, something seems off about this because you're misquoting him. Mr. Demery Ford, did you have commentary, sir?
Yes, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. You know, the myths, number five, black males are forced to date, marry white females because black females are defective. You know, I think this was a good thing. She was attempting to bust all these myths. And in doing so, you know, they gave their own opinions about it. And everybody don't have to agree, but, you know, she's got some good points. I noticed that kept revisiting Dennis Rodman's explanation about, if I were white, I thought I could be a little happier. I wanted to be white because I was black, and black was never the right color. Well, you know, probably no one will argue the fact that he wasn't confused, but it looked like he was being honest, at least honest in that respect. And then myth number six, where black males who use interracial relationships as a weapon. Okay, now she admits that the black male is powerless. He can't control or punish, in an attempt to punish the uppity black female. Then I guess what she's saying is that he rejects her romantically and makes a public spectacle of himself while doing it. But like you mentioned before, a male-dominated society, but if we're powerless, then black males wouldn't be included in that male domination in the, on a societal basis. And she gave a list of white males who had sexual intercourse with black females, made a list there. And then at the end, she said, in spite of all the above, some black females still find attention of white males flattering and desirable and will have sexual intercourse with a known racist white male. And the white identified black female may put white males on a pedestal regardless of status, physical appeal, or racist attitude, ignoring the odds that he will never return the favor. You know, that right there is, you know, it's a person, whether you male or female, if you don't understand the relationship, racism to interracial sex, then you will fall victim to it because all the brainwashing is leading you in that path. So, the black males, where it looked like being thrown under the bus, the black females were all in the same boat. And then in the end, she said, the less confused black female understand that as long as white supremacy exists, having interracial sex with white males or females makes her part of the problem, not part of the collective solution. And that goes for males also. I'll mute my line on that, Gus. Thank you.
Much obliged, Mr. Demery Four. Caller 7888, did you have commentary?
Yes, I do, Blessing. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah, my name is Aoife. I'm actually calling from Atlantic Canada. Just some reflections on what everyone's been talking about and also on the show. There was the section where she talked about the where she wrote about the sort of chase that you see of some white women towards black men. In Atlantic Canada, for example, that is real. There is actually no interest in the person per se. It is almost like, you know, when someone is going hunting and they just want to kill a lion or a bear or whatever, and then have a trophy to say that I was there. And it's really, really sick to see. It's also really, really sick to experience, which I have experienced because I live in a place that is almost 9%. There's like 3% of the population is black. So that part of it is real. Now, regarding the issue of I think there was also some talk about the inferiority complex, or the male as the victim, or even just black people in general as a victim. I think yes, there are some cases where some people are not realizing what they're getting into. I talked to some young brothers who don't realize that they're involved with people who actually don't care about them. Especially, like, I'm originally from West Africa, so you have some people who may have been working overtime to try to get a date back home, and then they show up here, and all of a sudden people are rushing at them, and they think that it's actually them, and not realizing that it's just an idea, an object that people are trying to consume, as bell hooks taught us about the concept of whiteness eating the so-called other. And then that leads to a whole bunch of weird, weird arrangements where they end up with kids, and you have white women bringing up black kids and telling the kids that they're not black, they're not African, they're white. And we know that that doesn't lead to any really good things. So those are just some of the things I wanted to share.
Much obliged. Thank you so much for dialing in. Canada, always good to have folks outside the U.S., what they call the U.S., dialing in. White supremacy racism is a global problem, and many of these patterns, as you just illustrated, can be observed anywhere on the globe. Just white supremacy operates worldwide. They do a lot of the same things worldwide, especially the sexual terrorism of black people, non-white people. Did not see any other hands. I will share my thoughts, and then if anybody else has a quick word or if they need to make sure to interject because Gus has been talking nutty again, we'll give a quick second. Just thoughts that I wanted to make sure I got in. I guess Dave Chappelle was mentioned in the text about, you know, the whole dress thing. And he just got an award. When I say just, last month, like in the last 30 days, he got the W.E.B. Du Bois Black Cultural Medal. He, Colin Kaepernick, and others, Nike spokesperson. And when he got the award, and I thought of this then, and it was reminded me because he was mentioned in the text, but Dave Chappelle did a skit where he was playing Nelson Mandela high on cannabis, singing show tunes from The Lion King, among, you know, other various skits and what have you, in a half-baked and all of it. But Dave Chappelle awarded the W.E.B. Du Bois Black Cultural Medal. Anyway, some of the notes that I took from this section of the text, I just continued kind of what I said from the first portion. With regards to Dennis Rodman, I just think it's so flagrantly incorrect that the comments of Dennis Rodman are used to represent the defective thinking and low self-esteem and lameness of Black males. I mean, this was, for people who don't know, Dennis Rodman was a former NBA basketball player in like the 90s. He played with Michael Jordan in Chicago. I guess that's why maybe she connected. He played, he was on the championship teams of Chicago in the 90s with Michael Jordan. I don't understand. It's not even just taking an entertainer. We're talking about a very eccentric professional athlete, which I mean, that's like less than 0.5% of the population is professional athletes. Why would his words, and again, Dennis Rodman of all people, someone who's known for just being really clownish and having, you know, all different types of color hair and being financially irresponsible and just being really illogical and crazy, why this would be the person to represent Black, I mean, unless that's the way that you think, yeah, this is Black people. Like, but anyway, but the key aspect for me is Dennis Rodman gets included. Okay. I wouldn't have done that, but okay. So we include Dennis Rodman. Oh yeah. The cowbell. Yeah. Sexual intercourse with white women, Madonna. Mm-hmm. Dennis Rodman also suicide. Talked publicly about sitting in a vehicle with a shotgun. At his head, I believe, while he was still in the prime of his NBA career, making millions of dollars, and has talked about this repeatedly and said, hey, you could be shipped back to the ghetto. He said that if not having those words said to him literally, he knew I could be shipped back over there broke with the other Negroes. That's what could happen to me. And he said he sat in his car with a gun. Depression. This is all that doesn't get included. It's just like, wow, like that's what I was saying before. Miranda, there's some compassion. There's some humanity that's absent. That is lacking consistently for Black males. They're just here to be punched on and talked about. It's just lame, low self-esteem. Nobodies who are feverishly chasing white women, every single one of them. And they're just like Dennis Rodman. That's the presentation that I'm getting consistently in this, I would say increasingly as the book has gone along. The broke Black males using interracial sex as a weapon. That's the word that was used, as a weapon against uppity Black females. Like, wow. If there's a line in the text where a Black female is accused of sleeping with a white man as a weapon against Black males, please point that out to me, but I have not seen it. And again, it's not that Black male is a victim. That's what it is. It's not he's using it. He is a victim. I mean, how is it? I mean, just that way of thinking, of conceptualizing how is it that a broke Black male without a job, with nothing, his way of taking out, even that's the way that it's being conceptualized, not that this white woman, whoever that he's hooking up with, is exploiting and taking advantage of somebody with nothing, and they're not getting anything out of this exchange except further exploitate maximum aggression. I think that's the way that I talk about it, regardless of who the victim is, male or female. That's the way I've been saying it for a decade. It's not presented in that way. He's using this as a weapon. I mean, just wow. That Black misandry, that's what it sounds like to me. Black misandry. That's why I said I have to say something this week. I couldn't, as with integrity, really should have said a lot more on the air when we did the review the first time around. But, you know, continuing. She even said, that's why I said it's so flagrantly unbalanced. It's so flagrantly unbalanced. She says, it is possible. Affirmative. It's possible for a white man and Black female to be attracted for the reasons humans are, for human reasons, men are attracted to women. I'm paraphrasing. But she says that. I don't think I've heard a single sentence that even suggests that possibility for Black males, that maybe a white woman and a Black male could be attracted for human. I haven't heard that at all. It's just how, continuing. In that same paragraph where she says it's possible for white men and a black man, a white man and a black female to be attracted, she says that the black female might desire this validation from a white man so that she doesn't feel as degraded as some black males have made her out to be. Even that, I feel it's so unbalanced. And again, this is a conversation that we had, and this did come out on the air because she took that same position for the BeautyCon game, as though black males are not impacted by white supremacist beauty standards. And she even includes an anecdote in this book where a black male said he was dark skinned, he was rejected in high school, ended up dating a white person. That right there could have been in the BeautyCon game. And I said, no, that is totally incorrect. Unbalanced. Black males are impacted. I mean, if you want to focus more on black females, okay, but I mean, to act like this doesn't impact black males, that is absurd and it's inaccurate. And I said Clarence Thomas, he has it in his autobiography about being America's blackest child, which to her credit, she included in the book when I said something. And she also said this on the air, that this was an oversight that she tried to correct after I said something to her about it. But it was all connected to the same thing, this unbalanced presentation, which, you know, to me, black misandry, that's all I can, you know. I didn't have Dr. Curry's terminology at the time that we originally went over this book. Yeah, I'll stop there. When she better for black females, for some of them to be in these tragic arrangements with a white man, better to be exotic than disregarded, black males be warned with that. I just thought, again, it seems very punitive in the way that black males are being presented in a book that's supposed to be black love is a revolutionary act. I mean, which again, I go back. I am not an endorser of black love. I am not an endorser of all the brother and sister. We're not going to be able to get all that until white supremacy has been totally vanquished. And even then, you would not need such a thing as black love. Not a member of a race, but a lot of that emotion, that's just what a lot of this sounds like, very personal and a lot of emotion. I just don't think that that's going to help us solve this problem. We need accurate, clear assessment of what the problem is, what's happening based on evidence and logic, and move forward in that manner, as opposed to just using and having a lot of emotion in how we evaluate what's happening and having our emotion drive and direct our thoughts, speech, actions, and even our feelings. We all have feelings. I do too, but logic as we go about the business of attempted counter racism. Did any other folks, if I have been talking wild, not making sense, if you need to point that out, please do. Or if you have a quick final question, thought.
Can I be here?
Ivy? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I think Red, she raised a great point about the anecdotal evidence. And I had a question for her, because I think that there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence in the book that does not line up with the data. And I know for me, like, I made a statement about an anecdotal situation about black men being chased, but with that, I presented a question. So I wasn't presenting that as fact. There is something that I attached anecdotal evidence to, but it was with data. And that was saying that most homosexuals are women and that the female homosexuals, 10% are black. The male homosexuals, only 5% are black. I actually have the data for that. And so my question was, is there anything that I ultimately just threw up the anecdotal things about what I've dealt with the salon and my car being scratched to match with the actual data that the women are mostly the homosexuals, because I used to believe that too, that it was mostly men until I actually looked up the stats. And so I guess my question is there any, I guess, anecdotal evidence that I personally present as fact that maybe I can clear up that I have the data for? And I'll mute my line. Thanks, Gus.
It seems like that was directed at Red. Did you want to respond, Red?
I apologize if I came off crass.
Sorry.
I know I did hear. I know I did hear it seemed like some anecdotal evidence, but I mean, that's fine. That's kind of what we go by. And that's at least, you know, that's just my code to remove that. And I would think about, you know, I've had comments and, you know, especially here about what I see here. And I'm like, no, that's still kind of anecdotal. You know, it's just one city, but again, I mean, it's, I understand that everybody has their story to kind of help them better understand things. But I'm just, you know, going to leave it alone. I was, like I said, I was trying to look up more information for myself to help me better understand rather than going by, you know, what I see, which is, you know, basically kind of different than some of the other stories that I've, you know, heard in the book and heard other people say. But I'm just not going to go into all that. But no, I'm so sorry if I came off wrong. And Ivy, I definitely always appreciate your commentary. I'm in my line. Thank you.
Yes,
Mr. Demifor.
Yes, Gus. I have a question. Can we accredit Dr. Eddie Moore Jr.?
Woo! Yes.
That's the way he described the sensation of interracial relationships. I guess it soothed it. And the one last thing, you know, she mentioned a lot of over six white females that accused black males of a crime that they did not permit. Well, it slipped my mind with the suits and lotion, but I had one last thing. I can't find it right now, but all right, we'll move on. Thanks, Gus.
For sure. We still have.
May I say one thing?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
I do definitely appreciate you guys bringing up the examples, kind of like I did notice that where rappers have been used as, okay, well, this is what black males feel like, black, you know, representative of black males, and, you know, the constant repetition of Dennis Rodman's words. So I thought that was a little bit interesting. I guess, you know, she could have, if we're going to use Dennis Rodman, I feel like what Raven Simone, I know like other people have, like if we wanted to kind of, you know, be equal when it comes to the confusion, especially around like race or racial identity and stuff like that. I know of black females who have said things like, well, you know, how white races are supposed to be better husbands and stuff like that. But yeah, even like the Slim Thug, I'm like, I didn't know that we were quoting Slim Thug, who I know, disrespect to that victim. I didn't think he had any type of educational credentials or even otherwise, you know, not even having going to one of these institutions to kind of be able to, like she even said in the book, speak about the relationships of white people. So it's kind of like, then why add that in there at all, his quote in there at all? I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, Red. Again, thank you for doing a phenomenal job with the narration. Everybody, Maddie, Red in Vegas, phenomenal job. Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Demi.
Go ahead. Oh, I just thought about the last thing that I wanted to say. It may be of some significance, but I was reading that a lady named Miss Harriet McKinley was noted as the first black female to... I guess, was the defendant in bringing a white man up on charges of rape during right after the Civil War. And although he got like 1 year of hard labor, which a crime that should have been a death sentence to him. Okay, I'll mute my line on that.
Much obliged. Quick thought, again, thanks to Red Meddy, phenomenal job with the narration. Final quick thought about the support of white women. I could be, you know, totally estranged. I'm in Seattle. I don't think most black males are thinking that there are supportive white women who have their back. I could be wrong. I am sure that there are some confused victims, black males and black females, who think that. I certainly emphasize on this program that we do not think of them as racist. That is a major problem, not thinking of white women as racist. That is different significantly from thinking that, oh yeah, they're supportive white women. If something goes down, they're going to be ready to ride. They're not. I mean, really? Do you all think that's true? You all think there are a lot of black males who think that white women are down to, you know, look out for us. They got our back. Do you all think from the black males that you all know?
No.
I don't know if I want to answer because I feel like that's kind of leaning in the personal experience.
For sure.
I'm going to say no. But I wouldn't base it on what I know. I'll leave out my experiences. Thank you.
Definitely. Just asking for anecdote. You know, this is not going down for the all-time record as the end-all be-all on the subject. But just for the folks that are present, you know, the black males that you know, your general experience as an attempted counter-racist, is that your assessment that black males or a significant number of them, they think, yeah, there are supportive white women who they got us or they got me. If something should go down, we have a problem. There are supportive white women out there. Is that the case? Is that your conclusion? That's your assessment?
The black males that I've been around out here and also in Ohio, I would say it might be 40-50%. Some say no, that there's none like that. And then others, you know, say yes. So I'll just, you know, leave it there.
Okay. So there's a substantial number out of the people that you know, they think they're supportive white women.
There are confused victims, yes. I'm not going to say that it's more substantial. The few people that I am around, if I meet one person who, you know, who seems less confused, then I'll meet one who is more confused, especially about Area 8. So it's kind of hard. It just depends on, you know, who I met, who's the next person I'm going to meet. It could be another person who is not as confused, but I feel like it might be, you know, 50-50, or maybe there might be a little bit less, like 40% less, more confused to 60% less confused. Thank you.
For sure. Her reluctant response, much obliged. I'll pay attention as I'm around people to see. I certainly think you got confused victims who, you know, that's pretty widespread in my opinion, beyond, you know, just males and not thinking of white women as white supremacists. That's something I've been trying to consistently work against in our time on the air over the last decade. But I will have to be mindful of support, because, I mean, that's in the context that it was presented, like supportive, like they're going to come out and, you know, protest and picket and help us solve problems. Like, really? Like, I don't remember having that mentality. I don't remember being around other black people, males or females, in any substantial number who thought that about any, like, about white people in general, white men, white women. I just don't remember that, but I'll consider it. I'll think on it a little more. If folks have insight on that, you can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. We will be back. I think we still have more sections to go. 2 to 3, I'm thinking, looking at the remaining chapters and just trying to guesstimate how long it'll take, maybe 2 to 3. We'll probably be on Wednesday for at least next 2 weeks while teacher training is being completed. Hope that does not jar folks too much. The archives will be available so you can keep up, continue the study. You can email and all that. We'll include your commentary as we proceed. Much obliged for everybody for participating. Thank you for giving us a bit of your Wednesday evening. With that, we will wrap things up. Again, we will not have Workplace Racism tomorrow. Obviously, we just did the book club or the compensatory call-in this weekend. Prenatal yoga teacher training, of all things. Wow. Looking forward, the white woman that's leading the training, she says she has been doing this for 20 years and she's taught exactly one male. I will be the second male that she has ever trained. I am very excited to ask how many black people she has trained. Looking forward to report and to discussing all of these reports about the stress that black pregnant mothers are facing because of racism. How could Gus T. go through 85 hours of all of this training and not bring that up at some point? Especially, we have a whole section in the syllabus that talks about stress and the pregnant mother. Ample time to bring it up. I will report back. Thanks for tuning in. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Dr. Welsing, many others would strongly encourage us, let's take care of our health as we move forward to solve this problem. Racists have taken advantage of many victims because we weren't thinking clearly. Being sober, I think, would give us the best chance to make phenomenal decisions, crank out new solutions to solve the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up each and every time we are in a vehicle, driver, or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.